listen to the Black Guy Who Tips podcast because Rod and Karen are hot.
In the zone, like Kaiser So say, always the usual suspects. No check. All I got in this game is my respect. And Southern pride, I be checking their fucking head. Scared. Looking up in your face, boy, I see dead. If you test like SAT, then I guess that we may be enemies in the peas. Freestyles be free bees. I be that wrong nigga to fuck with. Wouldn't I? Wouldn't I be the wrong one to try? Never eating chicken thighs. Only 20 piece mojo. Flow zone like Flojo. I want to figure out just how low would your ho go. They beat hit like Beat Street. Crush groove and never breaking. Crush groove and breaking. And never baking, rebuking Satan. We had you waiting for the second coming. Funny how time flies when you're rhyming about the album. I think they read. Oh, wait, I don't know the rest of that. All right, hey, welcome to the Black Guy Tips podcast. The host Rod and
Karen.
I'm about to mix his verse with the Andre verse. anyway, we're live on the Black Guy Tips. You can find us on Crowdcast, is where we're live. You can join in the chat room and have fun with the show. Yesterday we gave away the rest of our calendars for the year.
Yes, we did.
So everybody that missed that, you ain't get shit.
No, you did not.
Other people, y'all will be getting y'all calendars mailed out to you because y'all special like that. Of course, we can also, you know, you can leave 5-star reviews on iTunes or Stitcher. Let us know how you feel about the show. If it's nice and it's 5 stars, we'll read it.
Yep.
If it's not, we won't. We'll just pretend it never happened.
Come on.
Also, you can do stuff like go to theblackouttips.com and vote in the polls, leave comments on episodes, sign up for premium, theblackouttips.com/premium, walk you through all the instructions and stuff. So, yeah, all that's going on. The official weapon of the show
is the taser.
And the unofficial sport
is bullet ball.
And bullet ball extreme. Today's podcast is sponsored, is brought to you by Shadow Dog Productions. We have some audio plays, guys, okay? Mm-hmm. We'd like you to go listen to them. We have an entire album. It's called Sunspot and Other Ratchetness. It's our second album with Shadow Dog Productions. I think if you like our podcast, you'll enjoy the writing and the acting on our voice work that is on Sunspot and Other Ratchetness, man. Check it out. Leave them a review on iTunes if you enjoy it.
I know. We can act, y'all.
Mm-hmm. We can act. Also, we're brought to you by Adam and Eve. That's right. Adam and Eve trying to get your ass sexed up for Valentine's Day. Adam and Eve is trying to make this Valentine's Day one that you'll never forget with an amazing offer. This Valentine's Day, you can receive 50% off of just about any item in stock. Just go to adamandeve.com and you'll find over 18,000 adult entertainment products, including toys, lingerie, endless selection of adult DVDs, all kinds of stuff, lubrication, condoms. I mean, they thought of everything. And what's more, with every order, you'll receive the free romance kit. The romance kit includes a toy for him, a special massager for her, and a little something that you'll both enjoy, plus a free adult DVD to put you in the mood. And I say you mix and match all those things, okay? You put the DVD in her vagina, you know, use some of that oil on the nipples. I don't know. Get freak it up. I don't know. It's y'all's night. And that's not all. Oh no. We'll also throw in a free shipping on your entire order. So you get free shipping, to top it off. So it's basically like all you did was buy something for half off and then it just arrives magically at your crib. So check out adamandeve.com today to get this special Valentine's Day offer, 50% off, a free romance kit and free shipping when you enter offer code TBGWT when it's time to check out. That's TBGWT at adamandeve.com. All right. Let's get into the news. All right. What do we want to talk about, Karen? All kinds of stuff is going on.
Yes, it is.
Mary Mary's Tina Campbell has come out to add her name to the list of growing random black people, celebrities that want to support Donald Trump.
Oh,
right.
I like them. They're no more.
Mm-hmm. Yep. She decided that she wanted to come out and let you guys know that
she wanted to take them shackles and put them back on then on herself.
Shackles on her feet.
Yeah, she put shackles back on so she can't dance.
I mean, that does make sense. I mean, if you think about it, what Donald Trump probably wants to do to us,
I was rooting for you. We were all rooting for you. How dare you?
It's funny because, like, this is one of those cases where you actually don't have to say shit.
Nope. So many people gonna make it by just being quiet. There's a lot of people that might even agree with the bullshit, but they're quiet, so don't nobody know, and their lives will move on.
Yeah, everybody that makes that big sweeping statement about how they're giving Trump a chance, to me, it's like, but why? Because I still don't understand what chance to do what. What chance is he getting that he, what chance does he need because he's not getting it? And they can never answer that question. Like, what is the chance that everyone is robbing him of presiding over the country? He got that office. Now, is he supposed to preside and no one's supposed to say anything?
Right.
Is that what it is? Because, I mean, a lot of these Christian people, to be honest, didn't have a problem with Obama until he started being pro-gay rights. Like, they were cool, like, a lot of black Christians were cool to have a black person in office because, to a certain extent, he may not be as bad as the church is with it, but to a certain extent, he's a bit on the respectability tip, you know? He's very much like, look, man, you gotta get out here, you gotta try hard, you gotta no baby mamas, no this, and, you know, like, that kind of shit that they like doing. Now, he doesn't go as full as, like, and you're sagging your pants, and that's why you can't get a job. Like, he don't go that far, but, you know, there's some appeal to him. And, of course, because he's a, you know, wear a suit, clean-shaven type of brother, I think that appeals to a lot of the church-going demographic as well. But then it was like they felt a departure from him when he was like, also, I'm pro-marriage equality. You know, they were like, I think they tolerated civil unions, but I remember even when he first was running in 2008, there was a part of black Christian people that were like, well, this motherfucker's about to be pro gay rights, so we're gonna get buses down there. Maybe we can go with McCain. You know, I do remember those black people. So yeah, it's interesting to think now, you know what I mean, this idea that, well, we should give Trump a chance. And I think what they really are thinking is he can probably dial back some of the progress for the LGBTQ community, so we should give him a chance to do that, you know? Because when you see Shirley Caesar and Kim Burrell and the speeches they gave, those speeches were very much like in line with the idea with the GOP, which is that Barack Obama set us back with all this pro-gay rights shit, putting that rainbow on the White House. I ain't with that, you know? So you can see, like, when that, I guess what I'm saying is I get very suspicious when you see black Christian people wanting to give Trump a chance, because it sounds more like, let's give his bigotry a chance. Maybe he'll do that for us. If he does that, then I'm gonna be okay with him doing all the shit. You know, in addition to the shit like this Muslim ban stuff, there's a lot, like, regardless of how people think Christianity should be run, the realism of the way that it's really portrayed out is that there's a lot of people that see Christianity as a competition, that see religion as a competition, that just wants their side to win like a sport. And so there's no healthy respect for other people's religions. And it's in a lot of these texts, which is like, we the true and only way. These other motherfuckers are wrong. So I think a lot of people will see his Muslim ban as more of a doubling down of, like, good, Christians are winning, as opposed to the attack on religious freedom that is in the Constitution. As the, you know, supposed founding of this country is about running from religious persecution. Mm-hmm. And here we are turning away people running from, in many cases, religious persecution, you know? So, it's to me, when I see a black Christian person support this shit, I'm always wary, like, okay, so which part of his platform drew you in? The idea that maybe he's gonna set things, quote unquote, right with these gay people, or the part where he's gonna, you know, ban Muslims and shit. Cause I don't believe it's anything you wrote. Like, all this shit you wrote about, God says give him a chance, Mr. Donald Trump is the president, all that shit, I'm just like, nah. What is it really, though? What is it that you don't wanna say that you wrote all this shit about?
Right, these fucking flowery ass words that nobody gives a fuck about.
Right. Not to mention, like, where were your politics all this other time? Right? How many people for 8 years didn't have anything political to say?
At all. Been quiet.
There wasn't a give Barack Obama a chance Facebook post. There wasn't. Like, why are you deciding to get involved now to try to promote people into supporting this dude. I don't know. Maybe she just want to perform at the thing too, you know? And maybe some of this backlash that some of these, like, quote unquote Christian artists have gotten, maybe now you're seeing people try to, like, join together. Cause, like, I saw India RE wrote an open letter in support of Chrisette Michelle. Right. So, you know, it's like a lot of, like, my friend, and people are quick to do some stupid shit, like jump in front of a bullet for a friend that's wrong.
Right. And a lot of this is, I don't want to be me. Like, a lot mm-hmm. of times when people are in industries where they quote unquote feel under attack, even if they're not, because a lot of times the people that are getting attacked said dumb shit. You didn't say nothing dumb. Right. So when nobody paying you no attention, you didn't have to make the letter. You didn't have to take the bullet. So all the anger that was at her is basically going to be rerouted to you now because you stood up in front of her.
Yeah, it's like how when a comedian gets in trouble for saying a joke that's terrible, a bunch of comedians always step up to defend a bad joke. Like every time. Because it's really not the principle of the joke. They're worried that what if it's me one day? What if I make that fucked up joke and it doesn't go over well and people come for me and they don't look at the consequences? Like, well, what happens? Like when we talk about like what's going to happen to say like Chrisette Michelle, even in our wildest imaginations, the only thing I imagine is that she won't make as much money.
Right.
Like it's not like I'm imagining she's going to go to jail or people going to physically assault her, or it's just people going to stop fucking with her and go, yeah, man, she's the one that went down there and shook Trump's hand, or didn't even get to shake Trump's hand.
Right.
You know, like that's it. But then people start feeling so sorry for these people. But I'm like, if you can have that empathy for these celebrities, where's your empathy for these Muslims? What's your empathy for, you know, the immigrants to America? What's your empathy for those people? Because you got a lot of empathy for this rich, powerful white man. And you want to give everybody, put them on notice that we need to give them a chance. But where's your empathy the other way? Cause that's what I'm starting to look at people and be like, so wait a minute. So it's cool. You know, most of the Muslims in America are black. Do you even know that?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like you just keep thinking it's some immigrant shit, you know, like, oh, they gonna not let them come in the country. But even then it's wrong, you know, but yeah, it's interesting to see where people decide to step in front of that bullet, because it's a lot of we need to feel sorry for and give this white man a chance shit coming from these celebrities, and I don't trust them. Mm-mm. You know, to be quite honest. Anyway, see what other news we got. Anti-choice advocate admits to Joy Reid that her ultimate goal is to make birth control illegal.
No shit.
There you go, guys.
No shit. That's what people been saying the whole time. You don't really give a fuck. You just don't want people on any type of form of birth control.
Yeah.
And then you're going to have a bunch of babies around here that you're not going to fucking cover. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, and I will continue to say this, this country is built off fucking slavery. It's built off slavery. We will never get over free labor. So you've always got to have somebody overpopulated, uneducated, locking them up, and having them do shit for free.
And you think that's how far this woman has thought this through? This anti-abortion advocate that I want slavery back?
She hasn't thought that all the way through. Believe you me, somebody somewhere, because it's the foundation of how we function.
Mm-hmm.
So that might not be her intention, but this is going to be the end results of it. Mm. Overpopulation of people, not being covered, where they're going to go, they can't work, they're going to lock them up. Okay, you're going to lock them up and go to jail. Okay, and jail is literally free slave labor nowadays, paying you pennies if they pay you anything. Our country has never gotten over slavery, and we need to admit that. Until we admit that our country has never gotten over slavery, we cannot move forward. That's why when it comes to went from blacks to Mexicans, people of Mexican descent. And the reason why I say this is because people want to know why their apples are so cheap. That's because you got people up here, undocumented, fucking working for free. That's what you got. Mm-hmm. And when they stop and they start paying American rates, your Granny Smith apple going to be $5. You're going to have a fucking fit because nobody wants to pay prices when you tag American productivity to it.
Yeah, I think the thing that's interesting to me is I don't believe she's thought it all the way out to because we need slaves and shit, but it's interesting. The logical extent of this has always been there, but I feel like people feel emboldened and empowered in the new, like, quote unquote Trump America, well, we could just come out and say what we really mean, you know, because like people forever have been saying, well, what do you want? No, well, within reason. Well, what about this? Well, no, I mean, I'm not saying that. And now you're getting people just flat out coming out and being like, yeah, I want everybody to be forced to have children. That's what you're saying. And what I think even more important than the forced to have children, and I think this is the I don't know, the low key, the real justification. They want women to not have sex and to be punished for having sex.
Right.
I think that more than anything is what this has always been about. Like, we need to control women. And one of the ways to control women is to make sex as penalizing as possible, whether it's through pregnancy and birth. I think some of these people see pregnancy as a penalty for sex. And they want these women to feel discouraged from sex and to only use it within the constraints of the Bible to reproduce and not for their own sexual
enjoyment.
Yeah, enjoyment. That's what all this shit kind of comes down to for me, is what I, or at least that I think, is just there's a ton of people out there that are just like, how do we get women to be ashamed of having sex again? Oh, don't let them have birth control. Don't let them have abortions. Don't let them, you know, like, we're gonna make sure that they keep their legs closed the way that a woman should, because we don't say that shit for men. This, it never centers around men. There's never been a movement to stop men from having vasectomies. You know, there's never been
covered by insurance.
No one's ever tried to ban condoms. Mm-mm. No one's ever you know what I mean, like, no one's tried to stop the Viagra being covered by insurance. It's only centered around making women pay a penalty, because also the other thing is, we feel like if women were quote unquote in control, men would act better because they would have to. Meanwhile, men are fucking rapists. Men are taught the opposite, which is literally like, don't preserve yourself, go fuck as many women as possible.
And also, when you have a lot of times these women having all these children, a lot of times they end up being less educated. You have more women not getting higher education. You have more women dropping out of school. Like overall, the overall economy fucking suffers. It suffers.
Yep.
And nobody benefits but quote unquote men.
Mm-hmm.
White men. Let's keep that real, because the rest of us not going to benefit from the bullshit.
And it's not like birth control only in this day and age. Like, birth control just has the effect of controlling birth. Like, no, it's in addition to being, you know, contraceptive, it regulates people's hormones, it regulates people's menstrual cycles. Like, it's more than that.
Right,
you know,
but they're so fucking idiotic that they just want to get rid of it. It helps for people possibly dealing with fibroids. It helps with tumors. Like, it helps with a lot of shit. You have some of them, when that cycle come on, they fucking cannot get out the goddamn bed. I know for me, I got on birth control because my period was like, you know how you had the side of the old school milk carton where it was like, missing? That's how my period was fucking missing. It was like, I don't know, I show up when I goddamn feel like it. So when I got on birth control, it helped regulate my period. So I consistently had a period every month, and I wouldn't be doing something and my period be like, hey girl, here I am for the day. So it's more than just regulating for children.
Yep. All right, so back to this conversation they had.
The Affordable Care Act. How much would an IUD cost across the United States? We have a map of that. So that's element 7. Sorry about that for my producers. So this is showing sort of what the cost would look like and how much it would go up after the ACA if we don't have that. The next map, mammograms, obviously would also go up in cost.
Mammograms
because
that Planned Parenthood doesn't do.
Well, Planned Parenthood, we offer breast cancer screenings, and then we refer out
just
like any other healthcare provider
to mammograms.
Yeah, so
Planned Parenthood's preventative screenings have dropped by half, according to our new report.
Well, actually, Alencia actually works for Planned Parenthood, so we're going to make sure that she's the expert on what Planned Parenthood does and doesn't do, just to be fair. All right, so here's my question to you.
Man, I fucking love Joanne Reed. You know what I mean? Like,
right, she was like, she's the ex, what the fuck are you talking about?
Like, I don't even think they've given her like a full contract. Like, mm-hmm. You know how like they, Megyn Kelly got a 6-year contract. I don't even think they're giving her a full contract, but she is so good at what she does. And like, and then she's out there kind of doing it like, without the same community aspect that Melissa Harris Perry had.
Yes, she is.
She is so fucking good, man. Anyway, I just love that slight, like, yeah, we're gonna let the person that works for Planned Parenthood talk about what they do. You, as the anti-abortion activist, oh, why don't you just shut up?
Right.
It's on their website.
So you said you're saying you know more about Planned Parenthood than Alencia, but who works there?
I read Planned Parenthood's annual reports, which show that their cancer screenings have been slashed, their prenatal services have dropped in half, and while their taxpayer dollars have gone up, they've only increased their share of the abortion industry. Planned Parenthood used to commit one in every five abortions. Now Planned Parenthood commits one in every three, despite the fact that abortions have gone down nationally.
Let's let Alencia answer that, and then I have one more question for her.
Just like any other medical provider, healthcare provider, even my OBGYN, you go in for a cancer screening and you're referred out for a mammogram.
Right.
That is what Planned Parenthood does. We provide breast cancer screening, yeah, and that is the work that we do.
And you can't get a mammogram without that referral.
Exactly.
And you can't get do you worry, Jess, that we're also going to get into the area where we're starting to talk about the legality of contraception, where that's
going to be a conversation? Oh, my gosh, yes. I think the fact that we have a president who has been on the wrong side, on both wrong sides of this issue, he went too far for the anti-choice movement when he said that women ought to be punished for having abortion, and he went, obviously, on the wrong side of the anti-choice issue when he said that he was pro-choice and believed that. This is a guy who is clearly, he has no principles to stand on here, so he's willing to take it as far as he thinks is politically necessary to do so. That could obviously target birth control. That
could obviously
Hold on.
We're out of time. I want to try to see if we can end on at least one note of agreement. Does everyone who is around this table and virtually at the table agree that at least that contraception should be legal? You think it should be legal, Kristen?
Absolutely.
Contraception?
I believe certain forms could be legal, yes.
What forms could be legal?
I don't believe abortion-causing contraception should be legal.
What kind of contraception are you talking about?
That would be hormonal contraception, IUDs, which terminate the life of an early embryo.
IUDs? So you think IUDs should be illegal?
I don't think they should be legal.
Interesting.
Ah!
Put women at risk, and they kill children.
Wow. Cool. What about the birth control pill?
I do not think it should be legal. I actually think that it shouldn't be legal. But that's not what we're talking about.
Kristen, we can't talk at the same time. I just wanted to get just clarity. Mm-hmm. You think that the pill and the IUD should be illegal, right?
In my ideal world, yes.
Wow.
But I don't think that's actually something we're working towards in the pro-life movement. In the pro-life movement, we're working towards abolishing abortion.
Yes, Karen?
What the fuck are you working towards then?
That's the thing. I think what she's going to say is like, right now we just trying to make sure people can't get abortions.
And then you're going to work towards other shit. Nobody's crazy.
She's trying to act like she's not counting this as work towards that goal. Like, get the fuck out of here.
And that's why we want Planned Parenthood's federal money going to federally qualified health centers, which do contraception.
Okay. Well, we have gotten some real clarity. I think the American people have gotten quite a bit of clarity on what your movement wants to do. I think it's important that we do that.
I'm speaking for myself when I talk about contraception.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm, dog. You there now? Can't be on there talking about, I'm switching it up. It's my day.
Mm-mm, you the president of some fucking club. You supposed to be talking on their behalf, bitch. They could have sent anybody out there. They sent you.
Shouldn't have said it then.
Right.
Because they put you on there to talk about your movement, dummy.
Because there's a lot of opinions in the pro-life movement about contraception.
All right.
And it's
and
a
we've
very
gotten yours.
Diverse
and
movement.
We've gotten yours. We've gotten yours. Thank you very much. Jess is going to be back in our next hour. Thank you to Alencia Johnson.
Yep. Mm-hmm. All right. So, you got that bit of awesomeness.
Right. And that's their purpose. And people understand that is their purpose. And that's why people have been fighting so hard against them, because they're like, oh, y'all think it's just to wipe out everything, take us back to 1925. Ain't nobody stupid.
Yeah, and also, I mean, it's also pretty obvious that once you get past the abortion shit, it's just about, I mean, not even past it, but once you get her to talk past the abortion shit, then that pattern is, oh, you want to make women pay for having sex, essentially. Like, essentially, you just want to, you see this pregnancy shit as something to be scared of for women, and it's the stick that you're holding over them. Like, you keep having sex, you're going to get pregnant, and we're going to make sure, okay? We're going to make sure. If you have sex, you out here getting pregnant, so you don't stop, okay? So that's kind of the point, you know?
And the thing is, you're so fucking idiotic, because you come out with these stats and statistics about how, you know, the birth rate is going down, people don't have unwanted pregnancies. Like, this is a, you act like this is a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a bad thing. And truth be told, a lot of the pro-life women, guarantee you, Some of them at some period of time have been on some form of birth control.
A lot of those women out there.
You can't tell me you haven't.
A lot of those women out there own birth control.
Right. As you telling other women they can't do the shit. Get the fuck out of here.
And here's what's funny to me. How the fuck did you come to this conclusion with all these people? It's really, honestly, so many people jumping in front of it using religion to be like, I can tell you what to do with your body. And it's like, what is that? Is that what God is? Is that what Jesus is? For all these people out there, is Jesus making people do what you want them to do? Because I thought Jesus and God was about choice. At least the way that it was taught in America was
free will.
Yeah, it's about you have free will and then God takes care of all that other shit. Not now let's go out and dominate the world and make them do as we say. But that's how this shit feels. And once you get to the point where you're like, oh, condoms is birth control. We got to stop it. Like, it's like, whoa, where are you going with this?
Right. Then STD rates are going to spike. All kinds of shit.
Women taking control of their bodies. What's next? You going to be able to say you got raped? I don't like this new world. I don't like any of it. Speaking of things people might not like, there's a new Barbie doll commercial. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, Mattel's Barbie doll, they've been actually really, kind of progressive. You know, I think the last one we watched, it was, they had a transgender, girl in there or something mm-hmm. like that. I think we watched one where they had a boy that was, you know, I guess stereotypically people would assume he was gay. I don't know. He was so young. I can't remember at this time if people right. were saying he was gay, but it was a boy playing with dolls. And I know people, you know, there was always controversy whenever they do one of these, but, now they got a new ad where, it's dads, like not actors, but the actual dads of these kids. And they all playing Barbie together.
Aww.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And of course, you know, as always,
which dads do play Barbies with their daughters.
Yeah, and as always, as men, as cishet men, we should be getting extra credit for all, you know, playing with our children. Anyway, let's cut back to these babysitters playing with their babies.
I'm a typical
oh, wait.
Man's man.
I go to the track with my buddies and we ride dirt bikes.
I grew up with four brothers. We did mostly
boys. Hold up. Two black daddies? What the hell is this? You gone too far. You have gone too far, Mattel.
Thanks.
Sundays are always football. And now that gets interrupted with a little Barbie time. I'm here to see the doctor.
She'll see you in a minute.
Oh, here.
Love playing Barbie, but I only play with Ken. Ken only.
Help, there's a fire in my building.
Amanda, we're quality.
That was not Ken he was playing with, y'all.
It wasn't.
Do you need to be an astronaut?
Well, you need good eyesight, 50-50 eyesight.
Now I want you to put your hands like this and hum.
Is the doctor ready yet?
Not yet.
I need an abortion.
Your insurance got denied.
Ken, he left it in too long.
You're Muslim, I gotta send you back to where you came from.
Anything she wants to be, or all of them?
What is 30 plus what? Yes.
31?
Yes.
Okay, woohoo!
You would do anything. Anything to make her happy. I'm feeling a little sick. I have a sore throat and a cough. I might have a fever.
Check your heart. Oh my, you are truly sick.
Well, what should I do?
Girl, you're pregnant.
Can't have no abortion.
And she was playing with a black Barbie, low key. I noticed that. That was a black Dr. Barbie. Y'all got those?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll be damned, but wonders never cease. Men playing with their daughters. What? Trump was right. What is this country coming to, guys? But yeah, I thought that was cute. Mattel, man, they be out there. I can't imagine what the comments are on that article, and I'm
right.
not gonna look.
And that's why Marvel and some of these other places, when they come out with these dolls, a lot of times they don't go through Mattel. Come Mattel, but like, well, what the fuck? Yeah, we want Scarlet Witch and Black Widow. We want all the money.
Mm-hmm. Twitter says FBI forced it to share user data.
I believe that.
I believe that as well. I want to know what force means.
And that's right. Force, or do you mean they came and you said okay?
Right.
Like, that's not forced. Mm-hmm. You literally didn't put no objection. You said force because you know motherfuckers would be like, bitch, please.
It received two national security requests, one in 2015 and one in 2016, asking for users' account data without information, without informing the affected users. The company could not reveal this earlier since it was bound by gag orders until now that restricted it from openly speaking about the matter. The requests were received in the form of a national security letter. We have provided each of the account holders with copies of the relevant NSLs, certain information redacted to protect privacy, as well as the account data we were compelled to produce. The letters have also been published on Twitter's blog. The revelations follow similar admissions from Google and Yahoo in recent months. Each letter requests a special type of data called electronic communication transaction records, including email header data and browsing history. The FBI requests so far beyond the limitations set by the 2008 Justice Department legal memo, which said such orders could only be restricted to phone billing records. So, yep. They did. Mm-hmm. And they gave it up.
Of course. They ain't trying to be like Apple. Apple's like, fuck you.
Yeah, but I wonder what happened. Didn't Apple end up, something happened, right? Because they unlocked that phone.
Like, they unlocked it, but they didn't make it where the police had, like, a get out of jail key.
Yes, yeah.
Right, they were like, sure, we'll unlock it for you, but we not gonna have you just be able to open and unlock people's phone. Fuck you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Scammy sisters who sextorted Nigerian billionaires escaped before court date.
You don't say.
Mm-hmm. Of course, Bossa is where I got this from. Bossa reported earlier this month that two Canadian sisters who were locked up in Nigeria for allegedly attempting to extort and cyberbully a Nigerian billionaire, Jayoti and Kiran, were arrested and stand accused of creating the website Niger Gist Live and several other social media accounts used for bullying over 274 rich men across Africa.
Woo!
Yeah, and then you can look at them and they got that kind of like the Black Kardashian look. I don't know how to, well, oh wait, I could put it on screen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know the best way to describe them, but it's like, you know, clearly they was out here getting these rich niggas for their money. You know, you could just look at them and see like, rich niggas was all over that. Let me know when it shows up, Karen.
I will.
So yeah,
we see it.
You see it? All right. So that's the picture.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, like you can just look at them.
That's their thing.
Yeah, like rich niggas was definitely like,
they probably had surgery, some forms of surgery.
Two of them, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So yep. And they was out here apparently getting these niggas for their money and stuff, and then extorting them. They claim that they have video evidence of the billionaire dirty dog creeping on his wife, and they will post a sex tape on the website. The sisters have since recorded a video apology to all the people they hurt and claim they weren't forced to say sorry. Check out the apology. All right. Oh, their last name is Matharu.
We apologize to Femi Otedola and his family, especially his wife and children, and all the other petitioners. We created a platform called NigerGistLive.com and .co where people can send in stories. Most stories were sent by close friends or associates of people being written about. The intention was not to hurt anyone or to be malicious. The intention was not to extort anyone. We haven't received any money from this website. The money went to Babatunde Oyebode of Hustle Inc. We are again very sorry, and we assure all the petitioners that we will not have any affiliation whatsoever with this website or any other website that has to do with this. We promise not to say anything of the contrary to what we are saying now. We freely volunteer to make this video and not under duress because we are aware of the damages done to people.
Sound like they was trying to avoid that prosecution, dog.
I don't believe y'all. Go to jail.
According to Politics Nigeria, the Freaky Frosters are now on the run after failing to show up for court in Nigeria.
Right, because if you was that sorry, you'd be like, well, let's come on in and serve this time.
The absence of the ladies in court today has fueled rumors that they allegedly fled Nigeria silently last week. It's believed the sisters are still in possession of some digital copies of compromised pictures and videos of randy businessmen and politicians and discovered on laptops and iPads seized from them by the Nigerian police.
They're going to come back up. Like, they're going to run out of money, some they're going to come back up, and then they're going to throw them in jail.
I'm just saying. Speaking of online getting that exposing people online, Jennifer Lewis, you might know her as the grandmom in Blackish.
Yes.
Jennifer Lewis uses Facebook to put ex she claims stole $55,000 from her on blast.
Yeah, she ain't the one. That character is out. That's her in real life.
Mm-hmm.
She ain't the one.
She went on Facebook and she was like,
She was like,
who are you finna try? I bet it ain't me. Ooh, bitch, it ain't me. Caps. Who are you
apparently in her post, she referenced a lawsuit she filed in the case. Because she says he conned her out of $55,000. She said that just hours before her mother died, she learned her boyfriend was not only was an ex-con, but also was using a fake name.
Ooh, yes, ma'am.
Criminals at work.
I'd have been on top of that.
On September 11, 2015, only hours before my mother passed away, I learned that the man I planned to build a life with was a convicted felon and con artist whose criminal career spans more than 25 years with a special skill in swindling women. This man, whose name is Tony Wilson, had been sentenced in 2010 to 4 years in federal prison for conning investors out of $4 million and was currently out on parole. I learned also that his name wasn't Tony Wilson. It was Bryce Carrington. Lewis went on to claim that Carrington tricked her into investing more than $50,000 into the exact same sound effects business for which he had pleaded guilty, for which he had served time, and for which he was currently on parole.
Yeah, because she like, you didn't even tell me your real name.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, why would people have a reason to check other than, you know, beyond your like Facebook account or something? Most people don't check that.
Yeah, not
when I meet somebody, I don't be like, what is your real name?
But you know? It's not our generation and older. Younger people, yeah. And like, Lord forbid, I don't want nothing to happen to you. But nowadays, I'll be like, what's your real name? Your social security number? Can you buy a pack of gum? What your credit look like? Because I'm like, no, people just don't tell the truth. Nope. They don't make people like they used to. Nope.
Yeah. I don't know. Looking at this picture of this dude, I'm like, Jennifer, you should have known something was up. Oh, well, I guess this is his real name that I'm looking at, but this nigga got a picture with a lion hugging him. I'm like, mm-mm.
Ah, lion!
No, Jennifer, you cannot get taken by this nigga.
You got a picture?
I'm putting it on screen. Oh, okay. I'm putting it on screen for y'all. But yeah, I searched Tony Carrington and
picture this.
You got a picture with a lion.
What is he, the circus tamer?
Right? I'm like, that's a nigga that will scam your ass out of some money, girl. I think that's some S-curl in his hair, too.
He just got back from the safari. That's mm-hmm. the picture he took out there with the lion.
Right? Oh, this is my nigga Simba. Y'all don't know nothing about him. But, yeah, she put, like, the whole court, Lewis v. Wilson et al.
I don't blame
Los Angeles Superior Court Case, B.C.
It's public.
645841. Mm-hmm. Put the whole thing out there.
Transcripts, everything. Everybody gonna know.
Mm-hmm. Be careful out there, y'all. The game of love is a serious game to play. Mm-hmm. Sounded deep. All right. Let's. Republicans are trying to scrap Michelle Obama's school lunch plan. Mm-hmm. How dare that nigger make my kid eat healthy? Like, I've seen it all, man. People arguing that they need to eat. Their kids play football, so they need to eat pizza and cheeseburgers. Cause you know how healthy food just really destroys football players, Karen. You know how you ever heard that? It's like, how you gonna give a kid some healthy food when they play football? It's gonna obviously make their athletic body fall apart. You got to give them cheeseburgers and pizzas and ice cream and shit. Yeah, I just think it tells you how far this country is willing to go to erase a black woman's name off of something, even if it's healthy, even if it's better, even if it's helping your kids out.
What is the, what did it go from? Didn't they change the shape? It went from a pyramid to a circle, whatever that thing was. You know how they used to do a traditional food pyramid? Mm-hmm. They changed the shape of it. They're going to change the shape again just to despite her. They're going to change it back to the pyramid.
Right. A document released by the Office of Rep. Mark Meadows, RNC, called for repealing certain aspects of the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act of 2010, legislation that helped Michelle Obama's Hallmark program into law. The initiative is part of a broader plan released by Meadows titled First 100 Days, Rules, Regulations, and Executive Orders to Examine, Revoke, and Issue. The document, which is funny, remember when Republicans thought executive orders were unconstitutional? How can the president go against Congress and the Senate and just do what he wants to do? Trump written more fucking executive orders in like 9 a week.
9 days, and some people have rent their fucking whole entire presidency.
Mm-mm-mm. But it calls for Trump administration to reverse nearly 200 rules and regulations, including requirements of the 2010 law. The legislation is proven to be burdensome, unworkable for schools to implement, reads a related report of which Meadow, of this House of Freedom Caucus, which Meadow is a member. Schools are throwing food away that students are not eating. In 2012, the U.S. Department of Agriculture has implemented the requirement tied to the 2010 law that schools include either a fruit or vegetable for lunches subsidized by the federal government. However, a report published on August 2015 by researchers at University of Vermont found even though students added more fruits and vegetables to their plates, children consumed fewer fruits and vegetables and wasted more during the school year immediately following implementation of the rule. The title, Impact of the National School Lunch Program of Fruit and Vegetable Selection. The report noted that the average waste increased from a quarter cup to more than one third a cup per tray. Observing students at, you know what's funny? This is probably more of a reflection of the fact that we might even be over serving kids with their portions and shit.
Because
in a lot of cases, the kids probably eat what they like, what they require to eat because it's healthy, as opposed to like, oh, it's a slice of pizza, I'm gonna eat all this pizza, it's delicious. That's not necessarily a sign that that meal was a good meal.
No, it's not.
You know, as I can attest to, like sometimes when it's like, you hungry? Okay, here's a salad. I don't want it. Then you ain't really that hungry, to be honest. You know what I mean? Like, it's a difference, and I think we might be showing that our portion sizes are oversized. We're feeding like kids may be eating too often in a lot of cases, and in other cases kids just don't want to eat healthy food. But when the fuck has school ever been about what the kids want? It's always been about what people thought was best for the kids. Mm-hmm. You know, like, this isn't necessarily the same as like, okay, when you get to seventh grade you can pick what courses you want. You know what I mean? Like, I understand that kind of choice you want to give a kid. But to be like, all right, look, this is the school lunch. We're going to let you pick, every day you can just eat sodas and candy. Okay? If that's what you want to do, that's all you got. Just pick a soda and candy one. I think that's kind of ridiculous, you know?
Yeah, and also, at the end of the day, two things. Number one, she stripped a lot of vending machines. She stripped a lot of junk out of the school system. She ain't completely stripped it, but she stripped a lot of it out of the school system. And these industries lost billions of dollars from the shit that they was not putting in the school system.
Mm-hmm.
So now you got Trump. So now it's a way to get all this shit back into the school system. All these vending machines, all these sodas, all this shit with extra calories. You get this, all this shit get ready to flood back into the school system. And that's going to be a problem. Because you have a lot of parents that aren't healthy. A lot of parents don't eat vegetables. A lot of parents don't eat right, don't know how to eat right, don't understand the concept of calorie counting and things like that, just calories in general. So you can't push good nutrition onto your child. So for some children, that was the quote unquote only healthy meal they were getting out of the day, you know, which was of some help. This generation, this current generation, is the first generation where the parents will outlive the children. You have children in elementary school that have diabetes, high cholesterol, high blood pressure. They're dealing with things that a lot of people don't deal with till they're closer to their 40s and 50s, and now, you know, more in their 30s now. So, you know, you got this huge spike of unhealthy children, and it's one of those things where that's probably made her do this, where she looked at all these stats and statistics, children overweight and all this shit. She was like, hey, what can I do to help the children? It makes sense to watch.
Also, she thought, in my opinion, she probably thought this was the least controversial thing.
The least.
Can't we all agree we want our kids to be healthy? And no, you can't. Not when a black woman's deciding the menu, you can't. If Melania Trump literally just put her name on this program, it would be fine. Because when you look, I'm looking at the comments and the replies of some of the tweets that this, like they have tweets embedded in this article, and the tweets are just people taking pictures of their, like, cafeteria tray and being like, thanks Michelle Obama, because it's like a sandwich and some applesauce or something, right? And, you know, basically talking shit. And it's funny because some of the repeats, well, if the first lady ate this, she wouldn't like a giant size pear with legs, shit like that, where it's like, oh, this is about hating her, you know, like, you don't give a fuck about whether it's healthy or not for these kids. You know, it's not like you can't pack your own lunch. It's not like if your parents really so fucking upset by it, they can't give you a full Domino's pizza to put in your book bag every day of the week. If that's really what it's about,
right?
But it's not about that. It's about the fact that this black woman is in charge of this menu, and they hate her. You know, at any rate, they basically want to scrub her name off of it. That's how they would rather their kids be unhealthy and scrub Michelle Obama's name off of something than for their kids to be healthy, but Michelle Obama get any level of credit for it. anyway.
Yeah, and you're going to have a huge spike in a lot of the problems I just said. They were already problems, but you have fifth and sixth graders fucking taking high blood pressure medication and cholesterol medication at 13, 14 years old. That makes no fucking sense. You haven't experienced life yet, and you've consumed this much unhealthy food that, you know, that becomes a problem, because it will eventually affect you later on down the road. And it's just one of those things where racism is irrational, racism is illogical, and they were like, we're gonna erase anything these niggas did, even if it doesn't make fucking sense.
Yeah, something has to be done. You know, I mean, it's kind of like healthcare, right? Something had to be done. So it's easy for people to talk about how they don't like what was done. But then when you go, so what should we have done? They don't have shit. I mean, look at all the Republicans. Oh, we need to repeal Obamacare. This is terrible. It's the worst fucking thing ever. Okay. So what would you do? Well, we don't have a plan. Well, you knew what was happening before was untenable. We were not going to be able to have the people's premiums, the cost of health insurance, of health care, the unpaid debt of people, you know, coming into the healthcare system, using the emergency room as a doctor. We were not going to be able to sustain that. So we only have bad choices at this point. So whatever someone picks to mitigate the choice, and I really felt like it was a twofold thing. You have Obamacare on the one side, but then you also have Michelle Obama going like, how do we keep these kids, teach them healthy habits so that when they grow up, they don't have the same health problems as the adults that have now problems now.
Right.
And you go, we reject this. We don't like y'all black motherfuckers picking this shit. That's essentially what they said.
Yeah. And you got the first lady now fucking want to say your fucking QVC watch. That's not going to save your life.
Yeah. But she white, so, you know, it's elegant to put QVC on the fucking website.
Yeah, and I forgot, she was on Vanity Fair, one of them, pictured, and they were talking about her, and she was fucking eating diamonds.
Yeah, it was the Latino Vanity Fair. So.
If Michelle Obama would have been got them eating diamonds, they'd have lost their goddamn minds.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's get into other segments. As if things aren't bad enough, time to play some fucking with black people, guys. We're just fucking with those black people. We're just fucking with those blacks. We're just fucking with black people. That's right, guys. Time to play the game that we all hate to play. It's fucking with black people. The game where we go all around the globe. We find different articles that make us feel fucked with as black people, and we score them from 0 to 100 in intervals of 25. Today's contestants, everybody. All right, we'll see what everybody has to say.
I don't know, but I thought we was playing. My bad, we was playing without the music.
You were wrong.
Not bad.
You were damn wrong, Ken. That's sad.
So
you don't even know when we playing the game.
No, I don't.
Because the game is always afoot.
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. Steve Harvey responds to Black Twitter and others online.
What did he say?
He says, you got to do something. You can't just complain about it. This is just for Black people. Because I have the right to. Half of y'all talking about me ain't been on this earth no time and don't know what we had to do to even get here. But you sit behind your computer like you really all that. You type about us and you don't even know us. Mm. His feelings hurt.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like somebody's out of touch with how social media works.
His feelings hurt, Karen. Why y'all hurt Steve Harvey feelings like this, y'all?
I ain't do nothing.
Y'all talk about him. Y'all don't know him. You have to know people to talk about them. Everybody knows that.
And just because you're young, don't mean you don't know history, sweetie.
Mm-mm. They don't know.
Nigga, please.
Mm-hmm.
This nigga.
Mm-hmm. 0 to 100, Karen.
It's actually 100.
All right. For me, I would give him,
you know, I gave it a 75.
75.
Yep.
Okay. But why you take it down?
Oh, because he old and black and out of touch and just think young folks don't know what the fuck they talking about.
Yeah, I think for me, I give it about a 50. It's not his usual hijinks. I don't feel sorry for him, though. Because he went up there. See, here's a no. Wait. What am I saying? Not only this is 100, and here's why it's 100. You went up there to speak on behalf of all Black people.
Oh, come on.
And you claimed that your conversation was about fixing the Black communities and inner cities and shit. You ain't revealed not plan one. You ain't revealed not
talk about nothing.
You ain't revealed not one detail. Nothing. You ain't talked about how you talked to Ben Carson, any of this shit. So you can't claim to represent us all and then not want the feedback from us all. If not, then just don't go your ass up there. Right. Or go up there and say, I was there for Steve Harvey Brand, LTD, LLC, whatever the fuck. And then just be like, that's all I care about. I was trying to talk to him about how can I get on the Miss Universe pageant. In addition to the Miss America pageant, in addition to the Miss Teen America pageant, like whatever. I would understand that shit, but a lot of y'all motherfuckers are going up there claiming to represent the community, and the only thing happening is something for you. So that's until it's seen to be otherwise, you on 100, dog. Yes, people are going to be critical when you claim to be speaking for us, because you ain't spoke to us about it. You ain't spoke for us in no other area. So what am I supposed to think? It seems opportunistic. It seemed like a photo op. You need to prove otherwise. If not, then don't take your ass up there to be in a leadership position for Black people, because that's really what being a leadership position for Black people is now you got to listen to the feedback from everybody. Some of it's going to be fucked up. Some of it's going to be great. And some of it's going to be attaboy and all that shit. But that's what happens when you want to speak for a whole community of people.
Correct.
Anyway, 100. Celebration of Women filmmakers triggers heated debate among Selma Hayek, Jessica Williams, and Shirley MacLaine.
All on white.
No, Jessica Williams is Black. I think, I don't know what Shirley MacLaine is or not. And you know Selma Hayek ain't white.
No, she not.
So not all of them. Jessica Williams is from the
Daily Show.
Daily Show, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know she's Black. Is your coat wool? Alfre Woodard asked, she said, I don't care about this part. Let me get to the part that I care about. This is on, LA Times, but you know, they went through this whole shit. So basically this is, a meeting for, like about women in filmmaking. Okay. Mm-hmm. Supposed to be a celebration of women filmmakers. So they start talking about different issues. One of them, the idea of mentorship for up and coming women in the industry was floated by Dae Kadenet or Daddy Cadenet, maybe. Director Kimberly Pierce spoke about how it was important not to stray from female pleasure on screen and told a story about how the MPAA took issue with a female orgasm that lasted too long in her film Boys Don't Cry. Then the conversation shifted to our new president. My feeling, Selma Hayek chimed in, is that we are about to go to war. But she said she had a warning. She says, at Sundance with Miguel Arteta's Beatrice at dinner, she says she agreed that more women need to be hired so that female voices can continue to be recognized by the new administration. But be careful we don't fall into victimization. I don't want to be hired because I'm a girl. I don't want to be hired. I want them to see I'm fabulous. Don't give me a job because I'm a girl. It's condescending. Shirley MacLaine, 82 years old, wearing purple and pink in honor of Saturday's women's marches, chimed in saying that Donald Trump presented a challenge to each of our inner democracy and urged everyone at the table to explore their core identity. Then Jessica Williams, the former Daily Show correspondent who was at Sundance as a star of Jim Stroud's The Incredible Jessica Jane, spoke up. I have a question for you, she said to MacLaine. My question is, what if you are a person of color or a transgender person who, just from how you look, you're already in a conflict? MacLaine says, right, but change your point of view. Change your point of view of being victimized. I'm saying find the democracy inside. Hayek says, I'm sorry, can I ask you a question, to Jessica Williams. Jessica Williams said, yes, ma'am. She said, and Hayek says, who are you when you're not black and you're not a woman? Who are you and what have you got to give? Williams took a deep breath. A lot, but some days I'm just black and I'm just a woman.
Right, and you can't separate that.
Like, it's not my choice. I know who I am. I know I'm Jessica and I'm the hottest bitch on the planet. I know. Hayek says, no, take the time to investigate. That's the trap. There's so much more. Right, agreed MacLaine. There's more, the more inside. Williams, whose speech at the Women's March at Sundance was praised as the most powerful and effective last week, looked down and said she was struggling to articulate herself. Pierce tried to help her, saying that when she goes out in public looking masculine, she causes discomfort in a way Williams might as a black woman. But that wasn't quite right. So after a few moments of reflection, Williams returned to Hayek. I think you're saying what you're saying is valid, but I also think what you're saying doesn't apply to all women. I think that's impossible. Hayek says, what part of it is impossible? You're giving attention to how the other one feels. And Williams said, because I have to. And Hayek says, if you have to do that, then do that. Then that's your journey. But I want to inspire other people to know it's a choice. When Mudbound director Dee Reese, who had moments earlier introduced herself as a black queer director, jumped in at this lunch. She said she didn't feel like she was posing a threat to anyone, but in line at the bank, things were different. I don't see myself as a victim, she said. Jessica doesn't see herself as a victim, but it's how you're read. I also feel like the word victim, I feel like it has bothered me, Williams replied. When I talk about feminism, sometimes I feel like being a black woman is cast aside. I always feel like I'm warring with my womanhood and wanting the world to be better, and with my blackness, which is the opposite of whiteness. Cora, who had been cooking in the kitchen, cooking lamb stew and halibut, wandered over to share that she grew up gay in Mississippi, where she was sexually abused at age 6. No matter individual's experience, she said, she just wished all women would have one another's backs. It was a somewhat of an abrupt turn, and the transparent creator Soloway returned to Williams to ask her to continue speaking. You notice the trend? All the LGBT people, all the people coming up and being like, y'all need to let Jessica speak. Like,
because y'all asked her a question, then y'all want to come with a fucking answer, and that's infuriating, being black, particularly a black woman, because nobody wants to hear what the fuck you got to say anyway. You ask me a question, I give you an answer. It doesn't make you feel all frilly and warm inside, and then you don't want to talk about the shit, and you want to allow me to elaborate.
And they shut her down.
Right.
It was like, they didn't pose a question to listen. They posed a question to try to get the answer they thought they would get. Like, they crafted a loaded question. Like, so you think all you are is a black woman? That's it? And it's like, well, I'm obviously an individual. Right. So then look past all this, you know, like, it was like, oh, you're just trying to craft a narrative. And I'm just a cog in your narrative. Yep. At any rate, But yeah, the LGBTQ people, the people that was like, no, what Jessica said is important and it's not covered by what you're saying, and you need to understand that your advice doesn't cover everybody's shit. Like, you don't, there's no one size fits all with this kind of, you know, path, with these paths into this industry.
Right, and whiteness does that a lot, and that's what makes people mad and frustrated.
Yeah, and Selma Hayek, not a white woman. But you don't have to be a white woman to give in to white supremacy.
Not only that.
And to be fortunate. Like you're a woman who is seen as very attractive in traditional ways in America. Despite her being a Latina woman, she's still fair skin, long hair, big ass titties, skinny, you know, relatively skinny. Think she's married to a billionaire. Like, you're still coveted by whiteness. So your opinion is going to be one where, and I'm not saying other people in the room wouldn't be, but that experience of being othered and dealing with it, as a black person and dealing with all the differences. Whereas if you're an immigrant that comes to America and you're kind of covered and protected and seen as beautiful and, wanted by whiteness, it's a different experience than you're just a black girl growing up in America who may be talented and beautiful, but you got to deal with all this other shit to get to the same table that you're at. So anyway, she says, Soloway asked Williams to continue speaking. With intersectional feminism, it is our responsibility as white women to recognize when there are people of color or people who are queer, we need to prioritize your voices and let you speak the loudest and learn from your experience, because we haven't been listening. So please, Jessica, finish your thoughts.
Right. And that happens so much. And then people go, why you being divisive? Why y'all breaking off? Why y'all don't want to be a part? That's fucking why. Because you don't listen.
Right. This is why women can't blah, blah, blah. This is why we can't ever come together. Because the black women want to bring up that we treat them like shit. Ain't you the real problem? Williams, visibly uncomfortable, said she also wanted to encourage all of the women in the room to pay special attention to women of color and LGBT women. I think we need to not speak over black women and not assign them labels. What does this mean? Speak over, Hayek asked. To project your ideas onto me. I think there's a fear that if we present an idea that, hey, maybe black women have it a little bit harder in this country, because we do, black women and trans women do, if we're having it a little bit harder, it doesn't invalidate your experience. I really am begging you not to take it personally.
That happens a lot.
She continued, referencing Planned Parenthood to support her argument. While many women may rely on the clinic, she said 4 out of 5 women who use the services are women of color. So when you say women of color, Hayek began, I'm sorry, I just looked at Karen because I'm like, you know where this is going. So when you say women of color, and then Jessica Williams was looking down, she knows she was, so she was like, Jessica, do you mind if I look in your eyes? And Williams barely looked up still. The back and forth continued with Hayek questioning whether or not she was considered a woman of color. In Williams' estimation, nearly everyone in the room responded that Hayek was. Wouldn't it solve it if women just all had each other's back in general? Core asked suddenly. By the way,
that's the shit that's infuriating.
Yeah.
That's the shit that make you stand up, cuss everybody out and leave the room, but like, fuck y'all bitches.
Yeah.
Because it's like, are you going to allow me to speak or not? Please quit coming over me and speaking over me and talking over me and making assumptions about what you think I'm going to say. Because at the end of the day, the things I'm saying goes against your belief. It goes against your core values, and it makes you feel uncomfortable. And the second you feel uncomfortable, you begin to talk, you begin to speak, you begin to divert the conversations into other things.
And Kat Core is a celebrity chef and a white woman. This is our second interjection of, can't we just get together and can't we just see that we are one? And this is that thing where people silence you by appealing to the idea that any, you speaking your own experience is by nature you dividing the room. That's something that happens so often when people of privilege get with people and they want to have this like coalition. Before you can have a coalition, you have to listen. You know what I mean? You need to put the listen in coalition. Okay. I call it coalition. Okay. Coalition your ass to what we saying. But now you need to get together and you have to listen first, because how can you speak to one's experience when you won't listen to one's experience? How can you speak for more than yourself when you won't listen to more than yourself? You're already prioritizing your shit above others, because when Jessica Williams is like, well, it's different for black women. Yeah. But I mean, can't we all just have each other's back? You didn't say that when Selma Hayek said, don't be a victim. You didn't just go, can't we just all have each other's back? No, you waited till a particular junction in the conversation when this black woman was speaking to interject with, hold up now. Now we're starting to get divided. You trying to say some of us could be the bad guy, and obviously that's impossible.
Right, but sometimes you are the problem. And when you start getting into the conversation, and it's like, well, white people are the problem, or people perceive that they might be categorized as the quote unquote problem, then it's time to shut the conversation down.
Right. So, it goes on. Hayek then says, can I interrupt because I feel misunderstood? It's not shutting you up. I feel misunderstood on one point. We should be also curious about our brain. By being the best that you can be, that's what I was trying to say to you. Let's not just spend all the time in the anger, but in the investigation. Baby, I'm Mexican and Arab, she went on, addressing Williams. I'm from another generation, baby. That's when this was not even a possibility. My generation, they said, go back to Mexico. You'll never be anything other than a maid in this country. By the heads of studios, there was no movement. Latino women were not even anywhere near where you guys are. I was the first one. I'm 50 years old, so I understand. And Williams said, you don't understand, and shook her head quietly.
Right, because overall, people have treated you as white, sweetie. It ain't the same.
Even if, here's the thing, I don't know she's treated as quote-unquote white.
And I don't mean treated as white as treated as white. That goes back to what you said before. You're coveted by white people. Right. So when you're coveted by white people, they have a tendency to look at you very differently than they're going to look at me.
And here's my question. What would the other Latino actresses and actors say to Selma?
Come on.
Seeing this conversation, because she's now putting herself in a position of speaking for all these people. Like, and this happened with, I want to say it was a New York Times article, but maybe it was another publication. But I remember when there was Oscar So White came out, and there was an article that took the task Oscar So White as basically black people complaining. And it was by a Latino person that was like, because Latino people, we just show up and work. And we get, and it's like, motherfucker, have you looked at the list? Y'all ain't on there either. Oscar is so white. Y'all ain't on there either. So all this, we just don't say shit. Maybe it ain't working for your ass either. So maybe coming together, or at least viewing the credibility of this movement, would help you more than just, you know, berating and chiding and chastising people, because you adopting white supremacy ain't helping your ass either. Mm-mm. All because they think the same shit about you.
Yes, they do.
Even as you sit up there and have their back and you try to explain how it's all a meritocracy and there's just no racism, or if it is, it's not worth talking about, because if you ignore it, you'll just be better. Even as you say that stupid shit, you're not getting the accolades. You're not getting the representation. You're not getting the jobs. You can't claim, like, it's so funny, because there are people that'll be resentful of black people having movements and organizations and getting together and supporting each other, but yet they won't do it because they're so anti-black that they don't want to adopt our tactics.
Right. And what about when black people fight? Black people normally fight for all people of color. When black people stand up for something, it's normally for all people of color.
Oh, there's so many people that have ridden the wave of black progress.
Right.
Like for example, and chiefly white women, for the record. But when there's a affirmative action, biggest beneficiary is white people.
White women.
But when there's like a, hey, we want to make Oscars not so, you know, let's diversify the Oscars, or let's diversify BAFTA. They don't say for only black people. They just say for all sorts of, like, you need to have people other than just white people in these films if you want to get considered for these critical awards. Nobody ever says, well, damn, Javier Bardem would not have gotten this recognition if it wasn't for the fact that black people mostly organized and started this movement to get this, to get people recognized that deserve recognition. Because one of the things that Selma Hayek said that always will rub me the wrong way, when you say, I don't want something just because I'm a woman or just because I'm not white, motherfucker, you been not getting shit because you're a woman and because you're not white. That's the point. And other people have not been getting shit because they're not a white male. So you've been dealing with being held back your whole career without even knowing it. And maybe you got lucky and you punched through that wall, but there's a lot of people behind that wall, behind you, that are just as good, just as talented, and deserve that recognition. What happens is when motherfuckers are on top, they think it's a meritocracy, because in their mind, that feeds their vision of saying, I'm better than. So I beat racism by myself, and you can too. And that happens with many celebrities of color, many women, many LGBT people, like whatever marginalized community you're in. When you get on the top and you're looking down at everybody else, you want to, it's that ego that makes you go, I did this by myself. Y'all didn't help. I wasn't lucky. I outworked you all. I was better than you all. And that's what that's how white supremacy keeps winning, because you are feeding into it by saying you guys actually deserve whatever roadblocks are in your way. And if you weren't able to jump over those roadblocks, that's because you gave in to being a victim. It's not because shit is fucked up and I got lucky, because nobody wants to say they got lucky. Everybody wants to feel like they earned everything they did. It doesn't discredit your work to say that other people still have it hard. It doesn't discredit your work to say I got lucky. It doesn't. But then you wouldn't get all the credit. So you end up sounding like Selma Hayek, a motherfucking fool. So, anyway. 0 to 100, Karen?
Oh, I heard that whole conversation.
Yeah, that was bad.
That's why when you said, I was like, this sounds like a room full of white women. They arguing? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, nah, if it was a room full of white women, wouldn't be no arguing. So, we wouldn't even be covering that article.
That's true.
And be like, we agree, black people ain't shit. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's just interesting, because the article goes on to say, in the days following the record-breaking women marches across the country, it's tempting to view women as a unified force, but there's still thorny discussions to be had before everyone joins hands and starts singing Kumbaya. Yep,
and that conversation right there is why I was like, mm-hmm, that's y'all march.
I really appreciate that conversation, though. I need that. Like, it's, you're gonna need these people to make anything happen in the world.
Yes.
So, matter of fact, go to the next one. 0 to 100, Karen?
Oh, I said 100.
Yeah, okay. 100 for me as well. And Jessica Williams, hero. God. Man, she's so, like.
She deals with a lot.
And it's not just that, but she's, like, young.
She's very young, yeah.
And she's so outspoken, but then she's also so honest about it. And
right.
Like, because when she, I was reading her Twitter, and she was talking about, because people were like, oh, and I appreciate you, you know, I know you had to hold it back or something like that. And she was like, nah, it wasn't me holding it back or something. I just got shut down. Like, in that conversation,
right,
they essentially tried to silence me, and when I looked down and was just like, I don't have anything else to say, it was more about me saying, they don't want to listen, so what's the fucking point, kind of.
Correct.
As opposed to, I'm going to slap one of these bitches or whatever. It was like, she was allowing the idea to, like, I'm a person and my feelings were hurt, and it was, and I can be silenced just as much as anybody else, just like any human being. But we always try to ascribe, like, this magical strength to black women, where it's like, and she went in that room and she yelled at them white folks and she said, you gonna listen to me? And she was like, I really just didn't want to feel like the angry black woman stereotype, which is another thing that's wielded against black
Correct.
Women.
Correct. And something you have to continually fight against.
Yeah, man, she's just so everything. She's just everything. speaking of white people in these marches and movements, Alicia Garza, which is one of the founders of the Black Lives Matter organization, mm-hmm. She wrote a piece in Mike.com called Our Cynicism Will Not Build a Movement, Collaboration Will, which essentially was a tone shift, you know, for, I think, what a lot of people would have viewed Black Lives Matter as being more of a, now when I say this, I don't mean this pejoratively, but I think people view them as apolitical, which is right. Like, being pro-black is political anyway, but apolitical as in, you're not gonna endorse Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders or, Donald Trump, or you're not gonna,
do interviews.
yeah, you're not gonna meet with the White House to discuss how to, you know, like that kind of apolitical, where, you know, they may be helping local movements, they may be, you know, have some certain stances, you know, but like where they might come out and write a whole thing about like Castro, I don't expect them to come out and, like I said, endorse a candidate. Even if, for the most part, if it's a group led by Black women, it's probably mostly going to vote for Hillary Clinton. But without that official stamp, you can kind of still maintain your, like, objectivity or whatever. You can make, put it this way, you won't be able to be questioned by a lot of people that want to question you, because once you make choices and you commit to them, then all of a sudden you have to stand behind those choices. And that's been happening for a while now, but I think the group is changing, because Alicia Garza wrote this piece where she basically said, in order for this movement to grow, it's got to look a little bit more like the Women's March than, say, the Black Lives Matter March. Because there's so many more people that are coming, and they're messy, and they're not going to be perfect. And at what point do we let go of our cynicism and sort of temper our anger in how we respond to these people in order to keep them around so that we can get actual change? Because I think over the last couple years, if no other lesson has been stressed, is this: y'all can't do it by yourselves.
Oh, nobody can.
So while it's anger inducing to think about how you can't, but it's historical too. No one's ever done it by themselves.
Right.
People give Martin Luther King all the credit, but end of the day, white people had to feel bad.
Right.
He essentially just
in March too.
Yeah. He essentially had to guilt them into a point where they felt so bad about it. And when he got killed, he gave his life up so that white people felt so bad that they were like, okay, we'll let you go to our schools. Like, that's it, y'all. It wasn't this magnificent, like, waving of a wand and then white mm-hmm. people understood magically. Mm-mm. You guilt people into doing this shit, you know? Hold on, I gotta go to the next section before we get cut off. Hold on.
Okay.
And then we'll get back into this. But yeah, it's one of the biggest misperceptions or misconceptions, and also it's a huge disservice that we've done to children, and we've done, you know, to adults, when it comes to education about Martin Luther King. It's not just the fact that he had these quotes and speeches that we don't talk about.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of people that kind of easily point that one out. That's, you know, obvious. But there's also the fact that when we talk about Martin Luther King, we don't talk about the fact that this shit only worked because he knew white people would continue to be violent, and that the advent of live television and shit was going to allow for this to be broadcast not only to white people's households, but the entire world, which really shamed white people into allowing civil rights to, you know, to allowing like desegregation and voting rights acts and things like this. Like, you really had to shame people. And that part really doesn't get talked about enough when it comes to MLK. At any rate, so Alicia Garza says, I've been grappling with how to challenge cynicism in a movement that requires all of us to show up differently. On Saturday, I joined more than a million women in Washington, D.C. to register my opposition to the new regime. Participating in the Women's March, if you count satellite protests around the country, the largest one-day mobilization in the history of the United States, was both symbolic and challenging. Like many other Black women, I was conflicted about participating, that a group of white women had drawn clear inspiration from the 1963 March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom, yet failed to acknowledge the historical precedent. Rubbed me the wrong way. Here they go again, I thought, adopting the work of Black people while erasing us. I've had enough before it even began. 53% of white women who voted for 2016 presidential election did so for a man who aims to move society backward. Were white women now having buyer's remorse? Where were all of these white people while our people are being killed in the streets, jobless, homeless, over-incarcerated, undereducated? Are you committed to freedom for everyone or just yourselves? For weeks, I sat on the sidelines. I saw debates on listservs about whether or not to attend the march, the shade on social media directed at the White Women's March. Oh, shout out to me. Yeah, I started that. You're welcome. Unconvinced that white women will ever fight for the rights of all of us, many decided to sit the march out. Yet at time went on, and the reality of the incoming Donald Trump administration sank in, something began to gnaw at me. Do I believe that a mass movement is necessary to transform power in this country? Do I believe that this mass movement must be multiracial and multi-class? Do I believe that to build that mass movement, organized beyond the choir, is necessary? If I believe all these things, how do we get there, and what's my role in making it happen? I decided to challenge myself to be a part of something that isn't perfect, that doesn't articulate my values the way that I do, and still show up clear in my commitment, open and vulnerable to people who are new to in their activism. I can be critical of white women and at the same time seek out and join the movement, white and of color, who are awakening to the fact that all lives do not in fact matter without compromising my dignity, my safety, and radical politics. In the end, I joined an estimated, well, you know what's funny about that is, so much of what it seems that people have to do once they join, like, into the radical black pro-black militant politics circle, it seems like so much of what people do is focused around not wanting people to feel like they're compromised or, capitulating to whiteness in any way. And sometimes that's a trap too. Cause if your goal is your goal, like, I'll put it this way. Would there be a Voting Rights Act if Martin Luther King never talked to LBJ? I don't know. You know what I'm saying? White people wouldn't come up with that on their own. Like, there's certain shit where you're going to have to go into the lion's den and look somebody in their motherfucking face and work with them and shake their hand or whatever and come to it as, you are the power broker, and me marching can't change you being the power broker. Like, the way the system is set up, rigged, however you want to pronounce it or say it, what do? Like, cause there's a fuck you motherfucker, you're the one in charge now, so fuck you, things ain't perfect out here. And then there's a, okay, well, let's meet and talk about it and show me how we can get better. Fuck you. If I do that and I shake your hand, now I'm compromised. People see me as consorting with you. But that's how the power structure is fucked. Like, there's power and there's you. You have to have this, you have to do something to get to that power, you know? And by the way, I'm not even just saying with like presidential political figures. I'm saying with whiteness. There's power in whiteness, and then there's you. That's us. You know what I mean? And then, and for things to move, the white people have to move, you know? So there does have to be some level of like coming together, and it is going to be fucked up and ugly and messy and not perfect. It's going to be terrible. It's like, it's that thing I always say about Van Jones, you know, like I couldn't be Van Jones, but damn, we need Van Jones. I ain't talking to these white people. Not in a nice way, but Van Jones can. Yeah, Van Jones absolutely can do that. We need a President Obama. We do.
Yes, we do.
You know, whether people care or not, maybe they recognize it a little bit more every day with Trump, but you need a motherfucker that can go in there and make white people in Iowa feel comfortable enough to vote for them while also saying things like, well, Black Lives Matter means this, or Trayvon Martin basically didn't deserve to die, or the police acted stupidly. And, you know, like, we need those people because it's just... It's just the way shit is. We are not gonna skip past that step of having to deal with white folks. Not for freedom's sake. And it ain't enough of y'all to enough of us to get guns and take over this country and shit. They'll send the tanks in and kill all our ass before they do that.
All of us.
So, as angry as we can be, you know, I don't envy people that are in positions of leadership mm-hmm. when it comes to black causes, because angry as you gotta be, you gotta come to the table at some point.
And what's so funny is that and I guess to me, when anger can be used in all types of ways, and you could be angry about something and not be expressing the anger. And that's hard for people to understand, because when people talk about Martin Luther King, like the dude's Bigelow dude talking about he didn't give in to his anger. Yes, he did. The anger mm-hmm. is what motivated him and fueled him and kept him going to accomplish these things. A lot of times, anger is not the problem. What do you do with that balled up emotions? Because you're going to be angry about a lot of shit in life. And some people take that anger and they go, well, fuck you. And some people take that anger and they go, well, I'm going to change something, not forgetting how I feel at this moment and letting this anger that I feel right now continue to motivate me until I accomplish whatever it is I need to accomplish.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It, like I said, it's a lot. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. To process. And it's a lot that, because at the end of the day, you are going to be, you can't ask people to not be angry, but.
Right. You can't.
I understand the point of when do you give up on that? Not give up, but when do you curtail your cynicism for the greater good?
Right.
Cause I mean, end of the day, I still feel how I feel. And I read this and I have a lot of respect for, the Black Lives Matter organization, even with, you know, some of the infighting and stuff among activists that I, you know, support and fuck with.
Right.
I still have respect for, you know, the fact that they organize this, the fact that they, you know, speak their minds on so many issues and whatnot. But yeah, I've always kind of been, I would never like consider myself a person to join their movement because it's a little more, for my taste, it's a little more murky and less goal oriented and less, it's been more about, I think, getting a voice out, then it's been about, okay, so then this is the actionable plan. And I think movements grow and change. And I'm sure that, you know, if you just keep checking in on them, you'll see it kind of form more and more differently as it matures. Cause that's just what human nature is. But, you know, I support like Campaign Zero a little bit more because they have actionable items. They have, let's meet with this person and talk about this thing. Here's the people you need to call to change the political side of this, because they're already understanding and engaged with the idea that the political side of this is where the power is.
Right.
So, there has to be some level of interface with that, or else it's kind of meaningless. Because yes, we're angry, and yes, we want to have voices and make things perfect and all this shit. But at the same time, we have to live in the real world. And so you have kind of two sides of the same coin, where it's like, yes, go fucking march, tell these people about your experiences, let these white folks know, I know half y'all motherfuckers voted for this nigga anyway, definitely understand that. And then part of it is like, so then once you say that, then what? Because it can't stop there.
No, it can't. And that's why I've always, when it comes to the Black liberation movement, everybody has their roles. Cause mm-hmm. You got them people, they mad, they angry, they ain't gonna get off of it. They gonna be like, y'all white folks is wrong, and that's gonna be their thing, and they not gonna do nothing else.
Right.
But in addition to that, you need people to go, okay, we know your feelings hurt. Come on over here. Let me teach you. Let me help you get through this. Dry up your tears. Put on your big boy drawers. And understand that it ain't about you. Understand how you need to talk, how to be a true ally. Like, you need those people out there too. And you need the people that's going to say, okay, I'm in the area where the movers and shakers are. I can help policy changes. I can reach across the aisle. You know, I can appeal. You need a collection of all right. that blackness. And the problem comes in, a lot of times it's infighting within all that blackness, because some people think that their way is the only way, when right. you need a conjunction, when you need a collaboration of all three in order to get things to shift as a whole.
And there's ego involved. Right. I mean, you can't separate that from this. You know, I mean, I remember when people were like, well, Black Lives Matter is an organization. They don't have a leadership structure. They don't have this, that, and other. And I remember people saying that and that was like a thing they wanted out to the press, was like, you're not gonna be able to take us down by taking down one person or two people or three people or whatever. But then by the time we got to the VH1 concert, where they like celebrated like hip-hop, like women in hip-hop, there was three women on stage taking an award. So no matter how people view it, it can be quote-unquote leaderless, it can be that or other. Moments like that, people are going to be like, okay, so these are the three people. When we want to interview somebody, these are the three people we're going to call. When we want to, with someone you writing this piece for Mike.com is not just some random person in Black Lives Matter writing it. It's it's people are going to see this as a leader writing this. Mm-hmm. Your opinion is going to be welded as a leader. Like, people are sending this piece to black women who disagree on some, like, nope, you got to be nice to white people. I don't give a fuck. She said it, you know, so.
And that's the problem.
Right, but that's part of leadership too. Also, way to prove her wrong, white folks. What the fuck? It's like you walk at a party like, these white folks is trying, okay? They cool. Let's just give them a break. And then they like, slam, 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 slam in your face. Look what she wrote. But I don't know. I kind of understand and can definitely, relate to the point of, and also, man, she might be tired. You know what I mean? Like, how long are you supposed to do this shit? How long are people supposed to keep threatening your life? How long are you supposed to have a mark on your job, on your life, on your career, your children? Like, how long is that supposed to go on? Forever? Like, at some point you might be like, look, man, these the white folks we got. We gotta figure out how to work with these motherfuckers. You know what I mean? Like, I can see it that way. And then also you put in your time, you know, like, once you're on that stage and you're getting, you know, recognition finally for the work you've done and people want to listen, the people that want to listen and invite you to speak might be white people. Can you just be like, fuck y'all weren't there, and that's it? You know, it's I completely understand, man. It's a pragmatic approach, but maybe it's time for that in a fucking landscape that changed. I think even people that thought Trump would, that thought, well, if Trump wins, I don't give a fuck, are now being moved into, okay, this is worse than I thought. You know, like, even the people that, you know, thought that maybe he'll be good in some kind of way and we'll get chaos, you're like, and maybe there's people still out there like that, but for the most part, I think people are like, yeah, this is worse than I thought. Mm-hmm. This is bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, I hope people, you know, I hope churches today are talking about the religious persecution Muslim people are facing.
Come on.
You know what I mean?
Come on, because what people fail to realize, you start with one group and it goes across the board. That's how it always begin. You start with Muslims, you're going to branch off to other people. They're checking Muslim papers. Don't think they won't check your black ass papers either. Nobody is above reproach once you start down this lane. And that's the thing. You've got to support these people. You got to stand behind them. You got to say, this shit ain't right. You have to stand up, because sooner or later, it's going to come down your road and you're going to look around and you're going to be by yourself because everybody else already got fucking deported or arrested.
And not to mention, like, other countries, right?
Right.
Like, we just look at the United States, but what happens when other countries go, oh, we don't want your ass over here? Okay, so y'all persecuting Muslims? Well, we persecuting Christians over here. So now what? Oh, you thought you were going to take this trip to wherever for a vacation? Yeah, your ass ain't coming in no more. We don't want y'all, because y'all won't let our people in. You know, that kind of shit.
What about the soldiers? I'm sorry.
Hmm?
What about soldiers, too? Because, you know, people will be right. Like, hey, yeah, we got some soldiers over here. Okay, fuck it. Just go up there and just bomb the embassy or bomb wherever the soldiers are and call today. Fuck them.
Yeah, or the torture that, right. You know, oh, we gonna torture people. Torture is back in America. Okay, cool, because we got some POWs from the United States here. And if y'all gonna be torturing our people, then, I mean, we gotta move forward on that information, right?
Right. It's not as cut and dry. We cannot live on an island. People are dumb. The world is connected. We cannot live on an island. Everything is connected in some way, shape, form, or fashion. Be it imports, be it exports, be it money, be it stocks and bonds. Everything is connected. What we do here affects other parts of the world. For you to think otherwise is idiotic.
So back to this article, though. One of the things is, I also think over the past couple of years, the limitations of power of these organizations and movements has been on display, you know, because not enough's changing. And now that you have somebody who's anti everything you fought for, things will get worse. You know what I mean? Like, before, you could say, I'm just not satisfied with what the Obama administration is doing. and you know, not skipping past all the other shit, just right. Forget about all the other shit, right? You're just not satisfied with the president,
right?
That's no longer an option.
No, it's not.
This president's not gonna listen to you. Don't, and if anything, he's gonna support and encourage the police, and if and even
and
more
if, them.
Even more so, he's even planning on sending in like federal agencies into city jurisdictions.
Come on,
like this, you know,
national and shit,
national stop and frisk. Like, this is no longer this is no longer about like, let us say the black dude isn't trying hard enough. This is, what do you do when somebody's trying to be the exact opposite of what you do? Like, ain't no, I'ma hold these people back, or I'ma try to work with them, or maybe I could pass this type. No, it's just completely, yeah, go cops, go fuck them up. You know? So, I mean, yeah, what role are you gonna play in the future, man? I feel kind of bad, but I guess as bad as you can feel, cause I always feel bad for any of these activists that come out and like pick a position or promote something that I know other black people are gonna get pissed off about, cause I'm sure if you look at her mentions, she already getting called everything in the name of God, you know. And then you also have a lot of white people patting her on the back that really don't fuck with her, right, until she said this. Like, when she was critical of whiteness more so than this moment, they were like, oh God, these Black Lives Matter people interrupting my brunch. God, I hate them. And then the second she's like, look, we should try to work with these people. If they got this energy to want to change this country, let's use them, basically. And then they're gonna be like, yep, oh, I always loved her, she's great, smartest person. I saw so many white people quoting this article, taking like one sentence and putting it on Twitter, like the share, and it's all the sentences that face like, well, maybe we should kind of, you know, come to work with these white folks instead, you know.
But I think everybody don't feel like this.
Maybe we shouldn't be angry. That shit.
And that's the shit that make people mad, because you're not going to basically take a black woman to beat other black women upside the head who don't feel like her. We're not a monolith. We're not a monolith. And it's one of the things where she has a right to feel how she wants to feel, and there are going to be people who don't feel the same. Don't take her and beat her over other people's head like she's right and y'all wrong, because you just don't agree with us.
Yeah. I mean, sadly, there's going to be some trash white folks that use her words, you know, the way they use MLK's words and shit, like, right, shut up niggers, right, but you right. Just gotta, I mean, I don't feel like that should make what she said any less valid, you know what I mean? Like, she still makes a great point, in my opinion. And it's one of the things I struggle with, man, because I see stuff like white people coming along, it is kind of a okay, but then it's also like, good, like I said, I've been saying it for 2 weeks now, I'm willing to be like, but that's kind of what you need. Like, you're not getting this change the other way. Yeah, you might feel pure. The anger might be good. The rage is, and the idea of being so fucking morally superior to everybody feels fucking great. And saying, fuck all these people. I don't care. Where were you? And all that shit. And y'all voted for him. That shit does feel good. And it's true. You know what I mean? But at the same time, if you want to fix a problem, if that's all you got to say to the problem, then it don't get fixed. Cause these motherfuckers still are human beings with egos and shit. They not about to listen to that shit all day.
No.
It's sad. That's really what it is. It's sad to me. That's why I said I feel anger and sadness. Cause some of it is just sad. Cause it's like, and now you gotta go and basically act like that shit was okay. Like, Van Jones is ahead of the curve. That's where people gonna have to be. He ahead of the curve with the like, this doesn't make them bad people cause they voted for Trump. Cause you need them same people to vote the other way next time.
Yeah.
So you gotta start now with the, hey, I think you're redeemable. I think you made a mistake. I think you just got tricked. Even though I don't believe any of that shit.
I sure don't.
But you gotta do it. How else you gonna get it done? Cause you're not gonna get it done with this ever dwindling number of angry people that just say fuck white folks. I don't know what the math is on that, but it ain't working.
Right, and I agree.
It's gotten worse. I mean, we got Trump, but like, and I'm not saying this to bash them, but we got Trump in some part because of Black Lives Matter and because of the Black Liberation Movement and because activists and because of outspoken black people and because of social media and because people were so pro-black and openly about it. It ain't their fault. There's nothing wrong. They didn't do anything wrong. But white folks that weren't quote-unquote activated got activated.
Right.
Because they don't like that shit. Mm-mm. deep down, they haven't learned their history. They don't know how destructive whiteness has been. They don't have any inclination to want to learn their history.
Right.
And as soon as they hear any level of critique, they want to shut that shit down. And so people marching in the street piss people off that quote unquote on our side. All that shit. You know, like there's anti-blackness that came out of people that would have sworn, you would have sworn not a racist bone in their body until they couldn't go to brunch. And now you're like, this motherfucker racist.
Right.
So at what point do you make that switch, man? Cause you can't, like I said, it's getting less and less the more that it's just about. And also anger subsides. Even with them killing people in the streets, I bet you there's not as many people at marches now as there were when, you know, it was Mike Brown, when it was Eric Garner. You know what I mean? Like, it's just not, people can't, there's a shelf life on all this shit. And before people either get desensitized to it,
right,
or they just lose the passion, or they feel hopeless because ain't shit happening.
Right, and they just check out of
all. We're just at marches like, we angry, this is another fucked up case. And in a month, nothing happens anyway, because they figured out that you don't have the political capital to change it. So it's like, what you gonna do? We trying to make sure you can't vote. That's what we doing. You know what I mean? We trying to make sure that we can rig the way that votes are counted so that your votes don't count as much. That's what we're doing. That's the change that we're coming. Eventually, everybody got to come to the same loggerhead, which is, how do we get political capital? That's the way you move America. It's very sad, but even the movements that we attribute to the people all eventually had to tackle the political angle.
Yeah, it's one of the things where you have to play the game, even though a lot of people start from not wanting to play the game, but eventually if you want to see any shift, any change, any movement, you've got to, it has to be all inclusive. It has to be. But the thing about the all inclusive, it got to be all inclusive. Put like this, it's one of the things where sometimes you have to trick white folks into something being all inclusive to include you also, because if it's all inclusive and it centers black people, you are going to have some white people that's going to care. But overall, most white people are going to tap out. So you have to have something that's quote unquote all inclusive that actually moves your agendas also.
Yeah. That's what it is. It's, you can't do anything in this country without white folks.
Nope.
And that's just a sad place that it has to come to, but at the end of the day, when you see that, and I'm not an organizer like that, so who knows how she felt being on the stage, seeing these people finally listen, seeing her voice given credit. Like, maybe she can see a vision that other people haven't seen yet of, now how do we use these people? Because they're listening now. You know, because this is the other part of this election that I think people don't want to give credence to, because everybody's so angry with white folks for voting this dude in. There's a lot of white folks that got humbled.
Yeah.
And they're willing to listen now, and they weren't before. Like, there's a lot of white folks that in their arrogance really thought, one, black people were tripping about this Trump shit.
Right.
They thought we were, oh, why he's entertaining. And we were like, there's nothing funny about this dude. He's scary as fuck. No, he'll never win. He's a joke. And we're like, no, you don't understand. He's speaking to something that you don't know, because you don't get Twitter eggs in your fucking mentions all day. You don't follow the news about racism and shit like we do, because we have to survive this country and navigate this country. You don't have the wherewithal to really understand how dangerous this shit is,
right,
and how it appeals to white people that think they're not bad people. People owned slaves and didn't think they were bad people.
Come on.
So like, you don't even understand what he's speaking on. You just think that we're basically essentially tripping.
Right.
And now, when in this loss, in a way where every measurable, 99% of people who measured who was going to win had Hillary Clinton winning, many in a landslide. This blow to their ego is enough to make them listen. That's sad that it had to happen that way. They would have never listened. Mm-hmm. If Hillary would have won, there wouldn't have been marches, because white people wouldn't have been marching.
Right.
Black people might have been marching for something else, but white people wouldn't have been marching. And even the black people marching, it would have been a lot smaller march. You know what I mean? So. Yep.
And the thing is, a lot of times, by the time it gets in their view, white people's view, marginalized people have suffered. Somebody has died. Like, and I think that's the thing that makes black people mad. They go, well, you know somebody gonna die from this, and it continue to be ignored. And like you say, something traumatic got to happen for you to take it seriously. and black people go, well, yeah, we told you, but it's some folks over here that died. Okay, I got to, and it's sad that you got to go, okay, I got to, even though it hurts, not that you got to ignore, but I'm going to go, okay, I know people died, but I'm glad you're here. You know, it's sad, but it's, and a lot of black people are like, no, fuck you. These people died, and you're the problem. Mm-hmm. You caused this, and I'm not going to let you forget you caused this issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, yeah, like I said, it's, when I read it, man, I just, to me, I was like, well, that's kind of almost how you have to do it eventually, you know. And then the other part of it that I was thinking was like, as a human being, you could be tired, man. Fighting by yourself all this time, organizing the same people every time, no new faces in the crowd, a dwindling group of people at some point, you know, and a change that's not coming from your actions. Like, not saying they weren't causing any positive change, but just, it's like, is a police officer gonna think twice about shooting an unarmed black person? I don't think they are. So, you know, what are the tangible changes we can make? You know, like, there, you know, even some of the things that we like, I think a lot of people felt like maybe this will be positive, body cameras and things of this nature. Even with that, part of us still feels like, well, if there was progress that would come from that, it won't happen under Trump.
Mm-mm.
You know,
in fact, they might repeal it.
Right. Like, so, you know, other progress, whether people agree or feel that it's progress, I definitely feel that it's progress to have an Eric Holder, to have, you know, to have a federal, to have an AG that'll be like, let's look at all of the aspects of the Ferguson Police Department and not just say, hey, if we get this one cop, we win. No, let's look at, why are they so fucked up? Oh, wait, they have literally made a tax out of policing black people. That's a revenue stream. Now we can, maybe we can do something with that knowledge, because not, in addition to not showing people that black people ain't crazy, you're also showing that this pattern of abuse fuels their economy. That's a big picture move. Like, that's a big thing. Now, what do you do about it? Well, under Trump, nothing. You know what I mean? You can't even push him to do something. There's no protest or march that can make him go, oh, you know what? I'm going to start investigating this stuff. I'm going to continue these investigations and all that shit. So, yeah, man. Anyway, I read it. It's going to be interesting to see how, you know, she's treated around it and what comments people have for her and stuff. And, you know, I really just hope that people will understand that just because she has changed her sort of tactics doesn't mean you can beat other black people over the head with it. Because right. At the end of the day, that's just her opinion. You know what I mean? Like that. So let's leave it at that. Anyway, 0 to 100.
0 for her opinion, 100 for them taking and beating other black people upside the head with it.
You know, that's very valid. Yeah. I think I gotta echo that. But, yeah. Anyway, it was a good read. And it's on mike.com if y'all want to read it. And I suggest y'all do, man. I read the whole thing and was like, I don't know. It was like, it was fascinating because it's like, I've never, it's like when Malcolm X changed from fuck these white folks to, all right, I went to Mecca and saw white people that were Muslim. Mm-hmm. Maybe I have to reform the way I'm approaching the solutions to the things I want in America.
Right.
Like, it's like that to me, where it's like, wow, this is real time, like a real time sort of public discussion. I mean, it sucks that it's happening in front of white folks or white people involved or whatever, but still, it's an interesting time to be alive to read that. All right, man, we need to do some white people news. Okay, guys, let's sort of calm down. This has been very black, very frustrating discussion we've had here. Let me find on Spotify some white people songs. Let's see. Oh wait, this is the wrong playlist. Give me 1 second to find my right playlist. The hell did I put this playlist? What the fuck? It was near the top, wasn't it? Oh, here we go. All right, I'll use this playlist. All right, how about here's one for white folks. Okay. Right, white people news time. Of course, can't start white people news without the very bad news of y'all man Trump, because that's y'all's man.
That nigga, he had it lit up last night. Like I can't, because I know you were kind of sleeping, and you had, you know, you was tired, but I kind of was peeking in on Facebook and Twitter, and the stroke of a pen, and all across the country people was like, oh no, the fuck, you ain't sending my mama, my daddy, my grandparent, my, no you not. And people showed up by the thousands at airports. It got really, really ugly. And I don't know if you're gonna talk about Uber.
Yep.
Okay.
Oh, okay. You want me?
No, I didn't know if you're gonna talk about Uber. I didn't want to go into, we're gonna discuss it, but yeah,
no, go ahead, you got it.
But it was so fucked up, because a lot of the taxi drivers, a lot of my immigrants, a lot of taxi, regular standard yellow taxi drivers, especially in the larger major cities, especially up north, are immigrants. And they was like, nope, we're not driving, fuck you. So basically people couldn't get around if you were using taxis. So Uber actually hiked their rates and started using surge prices, which made people mad. So then they took down their surge prices and we're saying, well, we'll get you, it just takes a little bit longer. And the CEO of Uber basically supported Trump. So, you know, a lot of people would have been deleting their Uber apps, deleting their accounts. You have a lot of people who used to drive for Uber came out and said, I will no longer drive for Uber. A lot of people are starting to go to Lyft instead, like using them as an alternative to Uber. And also Lyft came out and they gave $1 million to the, what is it, ACLH?
ACLU.
ACLU, my bad. ACLU, they gave $1 million to ACLU. And it was one of those things where, it was, put it like this. In the course of 9 days, he's only been president for 9 days, he's had more protests that I can think of than any other president in modern history. Like, I don't know about the past, you know, but I know modern history. In 9 days, he's basically derailed everything Obama had in some way, shape, form, or fashion. He signed over 200 executive orders in 9 days. Think about that, y'all. That's a fucking lot. So all he's been doing is signing papers.
Wait, he signed 200?
Yeah, if I'm not, is it 200?
No. I think he might be on pace to sign 200. Yeah, it's not 200.
Okay, he's on pace to sign 200 executive orders, which is a lot. That's more than some signing their entire presidency. And I think that him doing the thing, signing the thing about the Muslims, the immigrants, affected a lot of people. And it made people come out in numbers. It made people, and I'm glad that a lot of people, I get, put like this, I told y'all I would give you credit. People, there a lot of people that were like, that white woman, Marge, was out here at this too.
Mm-hmm.
So I give you credit where credit's due. I applaud you that you still have that fire that burns within.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of white people, well, white women in particular, that's what I'm talking about right here, that came out in droves and was like, no, this is not right. You had a lot of people in Congress and Senate that actually went to the airports, participated in the march. I forgot one dude, he was at like a fancy event. He came in his tux and suit and tie, all white, all decked out to the event. And I think, for me, I can truly say this made me proud to be an American. I can truly say just watching the people shut the airports down, watching them protest, watching them be angry. And the reason why I said it made me proud to be American, because it was not centered around whiteness. White people came out, and people came out in a hole, and it was not, you were not the focus of attention. This is the stuff that made me proud, that made me go, this is what you need to do. People were calling congressmen. People were calling senators. They were emailing them. They letting them know that y'all need to stand up and y'all need to tell them this shit ain't, it's not right. It's not right what you're doing to people. And then the quote unquote, the kicker is that, the places that he quote unquote banned were none of the places where his hotels were.
And they're none of the places where we were, the people from, that attacked us on 9/11.
Right.
They're none of the places they came from.
Right. So,
like, it's just, here's some brown countries that won't really affect my businesses, that won't really affect the allies of the United States. And we will basically pick them out as the bands. The executive order was horribly executed as well, and horribly worded. It was not detailed.
So people doing what they
this is what happens when you don't bring things through Congress and Senate, by the way.
Right.
Because when you have to bring it through the American people, you essentially get to hear everybody's issues. And once you hear everybody's issues, then you don't have as much of a ability to dismiss them. You know, when you do an executive order, especially an incompetent administration like this that needed to sit down and be tutored from President Obama and shirked security clearance security briefings and shit like that, This is a man that pretty much is signing anything put in front of him.
Right.
What we're seeing is actually Steve Bannon's agenda, who's a white supremacist and former Breitbart person. Like, we're seeing what happens when a white nationalist has an agenda and is taken over. And he's the one, he actually personally overruled the Department of Homeland Security's decision not to include green card holders in the travel ban. So there's people that are stuck in airports, stuck overseas, that are American citizens, that have green cards even, that can't come back because he decided for 90 days we should put a ban on this. Now, a judge did overrule this. I think the Department of Homeland Security is even moving forward on the judge's orders, like, fuck Steve Bannon and Donald Trump right now. So at the moment, this is a banner defeat of Donald Trump. But it's the message has been received.
It's out there, and it won't stop.
And like you said, seeing people organize and clog up the airports and taxi service, and like, I think it was New York, was right, like, we the taxi union was like, we won't pick up anyone from the airport
right
until y'all, because there were like two Iraqi people or Iranian people that were basically taken into custody at the airport. Mm-hmm. And one of them's free. I don't know if the other one's been let go yet, but it was that kind of shit. And seeing people organize and be like, no, mm-mm. That is beautiful. And like Karen said, man, that's the kind of shit that gives me hope, as opposed to the Women's March or something like that. It's like the energy from that, because push come to shove, there's gonna be something to march for every month, every week,
right,
with this administration. So and there can be victories gained, and honestly it's up to the people now to put the backbone in the politicians. It won't happen the other way around,
right.
They only talk that game when they're campaigning. They only talk that shit when they're campaigning. They want to get your vote.
Right.
Because they know that's what people really want. But when it's time for action, you know, Elizabeth Warren, she's confirming Ben Carson, you know, you know, there's these moments where you're like, where's all that fight? Like, why isn't that fight? Like, I don't want to be an obstructionist. What are you being offered behind the scenes? Cause that's what it makes me think. Cause you were plenty happy saying you would be an obstructionist a month ago. Now it's time to work with these motherfuckers, and by work with, get steamrolled over. So, you know, I'm more surprised that politicians aren't just cynical and being like, if I stand in his way, at least I can be known as the Bernie Sanders of 2018, 2020. I can come out and be like, I said no to everything he said, so y'all gotta vote for me. As opposed to even Bernie Sanders talking about working with this motherfucker.
Right. And also the thing about last night, it was so beautiful because a lot of the taxi cabs were not running. A lot of people walked miles literally to get to these airports because, you know, in some of these major cities, that's your only form of transportation. And some of the cities were getting so ugly. They were shutting down subways. They ran back and forth to the airport trying to make it impossible for people to get there. And people had to come and say, y'all let the shit run. Don't strand these people at the airport. Just bullshit like that. And that's what happens when you make an executive order that's unorganized, don't really lay out the guidelines of what people are and are not supposed to do.
Yep. So, so you had the Muslim ban order from Trump, which essentially was executive order to ban people from like 7 different countries from coming in and out of the United States. Ivanka Trump was on Instagram putting a glamorous picture of her and her husband about to go out to a swanky dinner. And then she was in a silver gown, you know, let them eat cake. Right? This is the kind of people we have in office. This is what happens when you have a classless first family in office.
Come on.
You know.
Instead of coming on and speak, because Obama would have actually made some form of a speech or came out or just acknowledged.
He signed this shit like a coward.
Right.
You know, there's no press conferences, no mm-mm.
No nothing. So basically you have chaos across the country and you're fucking not even addressing it.
Right.
That's the type of president we have. You know what? What's gonna happen when we get the next school shooting? He's not gonna address it. What's gonna happen when it's time to go to war? He's gonna tell everybody to go to war and he's not gonna goddamn address it, because this is the bullshit. This is the cowardless bullshit that people like him do. He does shit and really don't want to deal with the consequences because he quote unquote don't want to look bad.
Tech leaders finally started speaking out against him, which I can't front. I was more like, now? So because the tech industry essentially gets a lot of their talent from outside of the United States, and now we're talking about their employees that may not be allowed to come back and forth to the United States. Now these motherfuckers got found a backbone. Twitter let them basically, let him punk their ass out when he didn't even invite them to that meeting after they're the platform he used the most. I would have deleted his fucking account, but I'm petty. But it's amazing how, you know, now all of a sudden they're like, this is un-American. This is wrong. Like, or is it cause you ain't got no coders, from the United States, you know, cause they got to go back and forth to their countries and they might be on that list at some point. Or you got Muslim people that, they're Muslim, but they also work for Twitter or whatever, you know.
And you don't encourage.
Now them. You care.
Right. And you don't encourage your ingrown American people who probably could code just fine. But a lot of times you don't want to pay American salaries. Yeah. You pay them a fraction of the price.
At any rate, Uber CEO pledged to compensate thousands of drivers affected by Trump's immigration ban. after protesters delete the app and accuse the company of colluding with Trump. So that's good.
You don't lose business. Fuck them.
Lyft is like on this.
Right. They was, the, you know what? Lyft walked in like, PlayStation did on Xbox when people were mad because Xbox was like, hey y'all, we think about the future. They was like, we gonna give the people what they want.
I think Lyft walked in like, yeah, Lyft was just,
they was like, oh y'all fucked up, oh we gonna get our shit straight. That's what they did. They kicked the connect off and was like, hey, this is, we hear y'all, this is what you want.
Yeah.
That's what the fuck, they was like, oh, that's how you fuck up, we ain't fucking up.
Mm-hmm. Like Uber, you know, they was like, oh y'all support Trump, because I mean less people got our app than yours.
Come on.
You know what I mean? But they walked up to all them users deleting their app. It was like, hey. So I see you, to be there for you. I see you deleting that app. You still need a ride from downtown, girl?
You still need a ride? Mm-hmm.
How you gonna get back to work without Uber? Cause, I'm here to lift you up, girl.
Yeah, we here for you. In fact, we get a discount. In fact, first rise on us. That's how much we love you. Mm-hmm.
Girl, you know, I just gave $1 million to the ACLU.
You know you like that, don't you?
Because I want you to be happy, girl.
It's all about you.
Mm-hmm. I see you over there. See you over there arguing with your Uber. But I tell you what, you ever been on a yacht cruise? Because I'll take you on a yacht cruise, girl. Mm-hmm.
You know what? Y'all talking about them surcharges? We'll even waive your surcharges. Come on over here.
Yeah. I do. Oh, yeah. He gone. Well, he just kicked you out your car. Because he mad that you had some, you don't like Trump. Girl, I'll give you a ride HRC all day. I'm with her and I'm with you on this ride. I'm telling you, man.
Yeah, they get ready to pick up all them Uber drivers. All mm-hmm. them Uber drivers that quit. Lyft was like, hey, I see on Twitter you said you quit. Here's the application right here. We'll approve you, right? We'll approve you by DM.
Mm-hmm.
Because they going to need the drivers.
Right.
Because they done fucked up. Next time we get to traveling, we're going to use a Lyft too. Lift us up, Lyft.
They said they will compensate as drivers who may be barred from entering the U.S. for 90 days as a result of Donald Trump's executive order. It includes legal permanent residents and visa holders from the 7 countries. Kalanick said it would affect dozens of employees and dozens of thousands of drivers. Federal judge in Brooklyn issued an emergency stay on Saturday night. It remains unclear whether that will relieve Uber from having to compensate drivers. The New York Taxi Workers Alliance announced an hour-long boycott of JFK Airport. They said they would be standing in solidarity with the Muslim ban protesters, but Uber said they would be reducing surge pricing to the airport. Oh, trying to.
I told you that's because mm-hmm. they hiked it because they knew they was going to have an increase of people trying to get down there. And right. then when people got mad, they decreased their prices and then be like, well, it's going to take us a little longer. When in fact, you should have been in solidarity with everybody else and just not doing it at all.
Well, I just redownloaded Uber, okay? Because it's not going to be it's no better time than to get in right now, y'all. I'm telling y'all, mm-hmm. these rides about to be cheap. I'm trying to get them to take me to Charleston. I'm mm-hmm. going to get a Charleston trip out of Uber. Because I'm going to call up there and be like, listen, y'all want to make America hate again? Then y'all need to lower this rate again because I'm trying to go to Charleston for free. First ride free. For everybody, no. everybody redownloading.
No. Mm-mm.
No? Mm-mm. Melania Trump is hiring a team to help her fight back against social media attacks. Once again, you can never ever be. Never ever. You know all the attacks Michelle Obama endured?
Come on, dog.
You need a team, nigga. You need a team. Psh. I know Michelle be somewhere up in the White House like, a block. Barack, you believe this fool said?
Could you imagine Michelle and Obama seeing all them protests and they drink and go, well, y'all said Hillary and Trump was the same, mm-hmm. sipping on margaritas. Come here, girl, come here. Do you see this? I ain't been gone 9 days and motherfuckers out there protesting. Do you see this?
Man, I don't know how he feel, dog.
Probably hurt.
Yeah, I would be hurt. They tried to stop everything I wanted to do and they erasing my legacy in fucking 9 days.
Oh yeah, I know.
I would be so hurt.
And mad.
Yeah, upset. I know Michelle just mad. And I don't blame her.
You know what? I don't care what nobody say. On the low, she had epic faces when Trump got inauguration. But one thing that can tell you that a black woman is angry, she didn't do her hair. She put her hair back in the swoop.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't take the time.
They ain't deserve it.
Right. She woke up that day, brushed her hair back. She personally did this. She was like, I'm not even gonna go get my hair done. They was like, you sure? Don't even waste your time. Just do my makeup and mm-hmm. I'm going out there.
So Melania need help. She need a whole team, y'all.
A whole team for abuse.
The
abuse she getting out of the fraction of people that's following her.
From all these motherfuckers, the most abuse she getting is people saying free her. All the shit people said about Michelle, it won. After Trump order, some lawmakers have spoken out. Many remain silent. Yeah, just remember the cowards. That's all I'm asking. Remember the people that didn't say shit. Also, I don't think this Muslim ban shit is nearly as controversial as people say it is. Here's why. Most of them fucking Republicans advocated for the same shit on that stage. They just knew better than to try to do it.
Yes, they did.
But when they were campaigning for votes, they completely were on the like, yep, we need to do something about these Muslims. And the president, they don't respect us, and that terrorist is going to get us because he won't even say Islamic terrorism. He won't even say it, y'all. Like, so a lot of these people stoked the fires of Islamophobia that only leaked to the logical conclusion that Trump already had, and that's why they got the support. You can't separate those two. And also, fuck Bill Maher. Bill Maher tried to come out and do like his closing thought or whatever, and this is only because I heard from people because I don't watch his shit show. But he tried to come out and be like, this was wrong. Bitch! You are you are one of the main culprits of Islamophobia in America. You try to hide it behind your atheism, but you don't hate everybody like that.
No,
you don't think of other people like that. And you have constantly, there's so many moments where people have put the clips online of like, here's so-and-so arguing with Bill Maher about Islam. Here's so-and-so arguing about Bill Maher with Islam. You fucking hate Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
And for you to come out of your mouth and try to be on the quote-unquote right side of history on this particular moment, ain't shit, dog.
Right.
It ain't shit. You ain't fooling me.
Next week.
Yeah, and people that are fans of yours have been ignoring your Islamophobia for fucking years now.
Right.
And that's the only reason they're tolerating it, is because they agree with you on other shit, which says a lot more about them than it says about him. But the point being, a lot of people are sitting up there congratulating him like he had some type of a pip. No, nigga, he still hate Muslim people. And his left wing bigotry is just as much a fucking precursor to this right wing shit. This shit unifies a lot of people.
Yes, it does.
Like I said, you got black Christians that they might not fuck with Trump's racism, but they fuck with his Islamophobia. So anyway, Trump administration hired a staffer known for racist social media posts, of course. Why not? Hiring a former field organizer, Teresa Unruh, was officially announced through an email that acting secretary Phil Rosenfeld dispensed to education department employees this week. She was blasted in media over the summer when a series of offensive Facebook posts were exposed by the media. Back in June, she shared a post that read, "We need Islam control, not gun control." Keep in mind, more Americans have died from kids shooting up a school than anything Islam or to even terrorist related, but cool. You do the math yourself. They were among several Facebook postings that reflected an insensitivity towards minority voters, including among them a viral video of an African-American man eating chicken while mocking his own race for a number of children they have and for still lamenting over slavery. Had me cracking up. Thank you. Please share this with people, she captioned. Huffington Post unveiled that it had traced back to discover posts that were hostile towards Barack Obama during his presidency. One such message accused the former president of treason and called him a terrorist. At the time, the promotion of such propaganda was not uncommon for the Tea Party types who would eventually compromise Trump's base. However, now that he has taken an oath to serve all Americans while occupying the highest the nation's highest office. His continued association with, much less his appointment of, such divisive figures in his cabinet may present a challenge to his reputation going forward. Yeah, may. But yeah, he hired racist people. Trump staffers have their own private email server. I know what you guys are thinking. But what about the emails?
What about them? What about the emails?
What about the emails from Hillary Clinton?
What about the emails? They're the same, y'all, right?
She had a private email server, so. But you know, he elite, you know, it, I guess it's okay for his people.
What about the email? As Bernie would say, what about the economy?
Yeah. Texas mosque got burned down after the White House announced a Muslim ban.
You don't.
Probably a coincidence. Probably a coincidence, right? All right. Meanwhile, after all this, Donald Trump says that the Muslim ban is working out very nicely.
Yeah, just like he planned it. Just like
that's y'all man.
Just like he planned it. Yeah,
working out very nicely.
So he planned it for all the protests and people to be upset.
All the confusion at the airports, people not knowing who was affected and who's not.
Right.
Americans being stuck overseas
for hours, days, still ain't back. Who was that? Forgot the name where people rent the homes. What's the name of that service? What people do, like, they rent out homes to stay in. They were saying that some of that they're offering Airbnb. They said that they're actually offering places for all those people to stay if they're stranded. But they said some of them gonna be stranded for a while.
Yep.
Trying to get back to the United States. So they was like, hey, if you're in one of these countries, let us know. Even people in Canada, you know, they send out things telling people in Canada, hey, if you're stranded up here, you know, and you can't get back to the States, let us know. We'll find you somewhere.
Canada prime minister put out a picture of him hugging a young child from another country, being like, hey, y'all welcome here. Like, I don't know what's up with America, but y'all more than welcome to come to Canada.
Yeah, you are. Here's some maple syrup, baby. Have a good time.
And Donald Trump called Vladimir Putin and Mike Pence, demanded to be in on the call because can't trust this nigga. In the call, he said, we'll see what happens. He may discuss lifting sanctions on Russia at some point.
Of course.
All right. The other white people news that y'all actually do want to hear. Okay. And we'll end the show on this. I mean, obviously, sword ratchetness. So we still got some more information going on with the Paula Patton stuff and Robin Thicke.
What else happened?
Paula Patton's son, Julian 6, is hyperventilating and freaking out after allegedly being abused by dad, Robin Thicke, as she puts custody arrangements on the back burner. Their 6-year-old son is allegedly suffering deep issues due to the alleged abuse he received at the hands of his father. TMZ claims Paula, 41, is focusing her energy on discovering just how troubled the youngster is instead of pressing ahead with custody arrangements. Julian has allegedly been hyperventilating and freaking out while Paula has hired a therapist to get to the bottom of this issue, according to a source. The news comes just a day after Paula was pictured out and about in Los Angeles for the first time since shocking claims about her relationship with Robert emerged. Photos showed the actress at a parking lot in Malibu with her son and an unidentified man who appeared to mediate a conversation between Patton and Thicke's new girlfriend, April Love Geary. A witness says Geary remained seated in another vehicle throughout the encounter. Patton was granted custody of Julian on Thursday after her mother had to call police when her ex Thicke showed up and demanded to see their child earlier this month. Sources say Patton arrived with Julian and handed him over to the mediator, who drove to an undisclosed location. Before leaving, the mediator appeared to pass a message along to Geary, walking over to her car to speak with her, then coming back and getting in his car and driving away with Julian. Patton initially wanted to keep the details of their custody battle out of the public eye, an insider told People. She said Paula very much wanted to keep this within the family, as she believes that was in Julian's best interest. However, she has to fight back to protect her son. As a mother, it's one thing to stay quiet if you're a victim of abuse, but once it extends to your child, you have to speak up. In court papers filed in the custody case, she claims that Thicke had been a longtime drug abuser, cheated on her shamelessly, and even beat her on occasion.
Oh.
But Thicke himself said he believes the sudden custody fight stems from Patton's anger that she was not invited to his father, actor Alan Thicke's funeral in December. That's a stretch. I'm not saying, we obviously don't know what the fuck happened, but
Right.
I'm gonna accuse you of beating me years ago to like see the child services gets called to the school, like, because I couldn't go to the funeral.
Right. The school ain't making that up.
I believe Paula's sudden ardent opposition to me spending time with Julie is a product of residual anger she holds towards me. Neither my family nor I would permit Paula or her family to attend the funeral of my father on December 20th, 2016. Paula did not have a positive relationship with my father, often made negative comments to me about my father. It is my belief that Paula only wanted to attend because it would have resulted in additional public exposure for her. As such, she was not welcome at his funeral. Paula has been exceedingly hostile towards me since, even refusing my request to have Julian on Christmas morning so he could open presents in my home, which would have been particularly special in light of my father's funeral 5 days prior, he said in court documents. But Patton's lawyer, Larry Backman, says that his client legitimately fears for her life. Paula has reasonable apprehension of imminent serious bodily injury to herself and her child. But yeah, she says she, got hit their son's birthday in 2013. Thick organized to have a massage at their home, and that she walked in to see him having inappropriate contact with the masseuse. I told Robin I was upset and that his conduct was not cool. I left the room and went to another bedroom and locked the door. Robin became so enraged that I interrupted his massage that he broke down the locked door. She said she spent the night at a friend's house. When she returned the next day, Robin became physically violent, pushing her to the ground and kicking her. Thick reportedly had another outburst 3 months later when the two attended Cannes Film Festival. During the fight, Paula says Robin hit me with a closed fist to my upper body and then pushed me onto the ground. She says she left the room to walk the streets of Cannes and called Robin's father, the late actor Alan Thick, for help in salvaging the relationship. In 2014, Paula says Thick exploded at her in front of her son and his nanny. I was in Vancouver filming a movie entitled Warcraft. Robin and Julian went to stay with me for the weekend. Robin told me that as part of my Valentine's gift, he was going to wake up with Julian that day, which was an extraordinarily unusual action for him to take so that I could sleep in. When Julian woke up that morning, the nanny brought him into our room, asked him whether he was going to get up and watch our son. Robin lost control in front of our nanny and in front of Julian. He jumped out of bed naked, screaming. Julian was upset and frightened by this unexpected rage, as was I. A few days after the Vancouver incident, two decided to separate. Robin quite simply emotionally wore me down. I felt abused and disrespected and depressed. I wanted out of this marriage, and I did not have the strength to go another day with Robin giving the emotional cost. Also troubling was Thick's drug use, even when caring for their son. Patton says Thick hosted their son's fifth birthday party April 2015 after the two separated, and that she was shocked to see he invited his drug dealer named Guido to the party, something she found highly inappropriate. From the start of their marriage, Patton says Thick had battled addiction. She says he drank and smoked marijuana openly in front of their family and used cocaine on a social basis. She says she witnessed these uses escalate after the birth of their son. Then as their marriage was coming to an end, she says he hid many of his issues from her. 2009, she learned their shared entertainment manager quit citing Robin's drug use as the sole reason. I was shocked as I had no idea till then the extent of Robin's cocaine abuse. His drug use appeared to cause a strain on their marriage. In 2013, in a counseling session, Thick said to have admitted to Patton that he had a drug and alcohol problem is affecting his behavior. Another issue that Patton brought up in the court document was Thick's shameless infidelity. Yeah, them pictures was telling.
Come on, dog.
His wandering eye ruined her Valentine's Day in 2013 when Patton says he treated her to a stay at LA's Chateau Marmont Hotel. She says they rented two bungalows and that Thick invited friends over to a party. She says they made love in one of the bedrooms. She fell asleep, but when she was asleep, Patton says Thick tried to have sex with one of the other party attendees in another bedroom.
Wow.
After the taping of the VMAs, I went to our room only to find Robin in the bed with two naked women. I left the hotel, wandered the streets of New York and called my brother crying. When I confronted Robin about this, he admitted to attempting to have sex with a stranger, but stated he ended up being unable to do so because of the amount of cocaine he used that evening had caused him to be unable to perform. Like, that's a, listen, baby, don't worry, I had coke dick. Why are you so, yes, I tried to fuck her, but I couldn't. Julian was in another room with
not out of my love for
yeah
you.
I just couldn't,
I
baby.
Mean he at least was like, I couldn't, you know, I just thought about you when you walked in the room.
Yeah, I would have tried to put it in, but that's just, I mean, my dick wouldn't get hard, I mean, because so why are you so mad? Julian was in another room with our nanny at the time. Man, I know that that nanny's eyes have seen rivers.
Oh, yes it has.
Rivers have come. Later that year, he went on tour, and when he returned, Patton says her husband told me that he had unprotected sex with seven other women.
Woo.
He then informed me that a tabloid had found out about this and that they were going to expose him in exchange for better treatment. Robin offered for them an exclusive interview. He wanted me to hear about the unprotected sex from him as opposed to reading in tabloids. I immediately had myself tested for STDs and AIDS, given his representation that his having sex with other women was unprotected. Patton said she even caught him in the act once at the MTV VMAs that same year. After taping an award show, I went to our room. I found, oh wait, they already said that. Why are they repeating this in this article? Oh, Daily Mail. That was so terrible. That was the same award show that Miley Cyrus grinded up on Robin Thicke during the performance of Blurred Lines. Oh yeah, that's the one where she was jiggling them little chicken cheeks.
Mm-hmm.
His inability to commit to one woman continued even after they separated. April 2014, Patton says Thicke stated he wanted to get back together and he was making an album about her. Ugh. That's when I was like, when I listened to that album, that's when I was like, this nigga sound abusive.
Oh, that shit was terrible.
It sound like emotional abuse, nigga. Stop stalking and yeah, go away.
That shit. So like
it was a terrible album.
Stone, I don't know.
Yeah, it's so
Chipping Aluminum Foil.
Mm-hmm. Cuban Zirconium.
Yes.
But one on one visit on a break from filming in Vancouver, Thicke left his phone out and she glanced a text message to his friend Rich asking him to come over the house because he had six naked women there. Damn, this nigga can't help himself. Asked Robin about the text. He told me he had sex with one of the girls in the guest bedroom. He told me that he had thrown a manicure pedicure party for the six naked women in our family home. This nigga was on some Peter Guns. I fucked up. I told him that was the end. Robin agreed to a divorce and told me that he had very little money left and he would most likely end up living in an apartment in the valley. In another incident on the day before Christmas Eve in 2013, Pat says her husband accidentally called her while he was having sex with another woman. Jesus, how you butt down somebody when you're getting some butt? Come on, man. In another line, I called his bandmates and begged them to reach to tell him to hang up the phone before the sounds of his sexual encounter were too much to bear. Patton says that at first they were co-parenting without issue, but she says she saw a change in both her son and her ex's behavior that caused her to file for sole custody. Patton's main concern started last year when her son told her that Thicke had started spanking him. She says she learned from her ex her ex was using corporal punishment on their child in December, and when her son recalled an incident on a recent sleepover with his dad, Julian told me that while at the old house, while spending the night with Robin, before going to sleep, Julian had asked Robin for one more hug. Julian heard his father walk down, fall to come back out to his room, and Julian was expecting another hug. Instead of getting a hug, Robin came into the room, came angry, and gave him a spanking. Julian told me he must have annoyed his father by continually asking for another hug before going to sleep, but instead of receiving a hug, instead he was hit. Around that time, Julian also said that his father grabbed him by the neck after a trip to the Virgin Islands in November. Julian said to me, I know daddy was really tired, but it hurt. On January 2nd, Patton said her son described the spankings in more detail while her mother was present. Julian told my mother that when Robin spanked him, it was really hard. We asked him to show us how hard. I asked him to hit me on the back to demonstrate. Julian described the hit as hot fire lava, but worse than that. Hot fire lava. You must have had them Dylon beatings. Spit hot fire lava, man.
When bland.
And showing me how hard he was hit, I was taken aback by how hard Julian hit me up my back. And I told Julian I could not keep this secret and that I needed to protect him. He became very angry, tensed up, and yelled at me that if I told, he would never tell me anything about his father again. Patton never got the chance to report the spankings herself because she was called to school the next day for a meeting. In the meeting, Julian's teacher said how she had overheard him talking about the spankings and would need to report them to the police.
She didn't have a choice.
Yeah, so this isn't even some the kid told me and confessed, like, because that's what people are trying to say, like, oh, she put that kid up to talking about his father. I mean, and is it really a stretch? Because we all believe this nigga was a cheating ass coke addict, right?
Yes, we did.
Is that really, like, such a stretch that, like, he was abusive? What? Well, I never. Like, I don't know, dog. Some of this shit just seemed like people don't want to believe Paula Patton.
Right. I believe her.
And then some of it was like, why are you saying it now? Like, well, if you find out, I can understand, like, to a certain extent, why she endured certain emotional and physical abuse during a relationship and being like, it's not going to happen with my kid. Sorry.
Yeah, you can beat me, but you ain't going to beat my baby.
So his teacher said that the previous month, Julianne commented to her that dad punches me so hard, but never where anyone sees. And if we're in a public space like the beach, dad would take me to the bathroom. Dad would never hit me in public because someone would ask what he was doing and then call 911. If we are home, dad would take me to my bedroom and hit me. Oh, so he did tell the teacher. Well, that was over a month ago too. Why she ain't do nothing that time? That's weird. Seem like you should have to do something. That's a lot of information to decide. Well, I'll wait and see if he brings it up again. She also said that Julian told her that her dad grabbed him by, I think even his dad, by the back of the neck and hurt him. He asked dad to stop, but dad wouldn't stop and instead took Julian to the bathroom and hurt him really hard. These startling comments led Patton to keep her son with her for the time being. She also hired off-duty LA police officers to provide security. The custody battle came to a head January 19th when Thicke showed up to a mother's house demanding to see Julia. Her filing states for that Thicke showed up at her mother's house on January 19th while their son was being interviewed by child services workers and that the singer refused to leave. After the child service workers left, Thicke banged on the door, demanded to see his son, leaving only after Patton's mother called police. This last incident with Robin was terrifying for me. It was terrifying for our son. I have no idea why Robin would resort to coming over to my mother's house creating a scene. In my opinion, his conduct in front of DCFS and other third-party witnesses is only evidence of either sustained abuse or complete inability to maintain self-control, particularly for the benefit of our child, she said. A judge agreed to grant Patton temporary sole custody of her son until the next hearing, February 24th. Till then, Thicke will still be able to see his son 3 times a week and supervise visits at a neutral location. Ginsburg wrote in the court filing that Thicke is seeking sole custody and accuses Patton of manipulating their son. Emails were not returned from him and his publisher. So we'll see. Damn. Got serious as fuck. That was like, first it was just like blurred lines. Now it's like, this nigga was beating up.
Right. So he was doing more than knocking.
Upside her head.
Upside that baby too.
Mm-hmm. Rebranded Lindsay Lohan sports another new head scarf in Greece amid claims she converted to Islam.
Oh, girl,
you ain't gonna be able to get back in the country.
They gonna ban your list like everybody else.
You must not have Twitter over there, because this is not the time to be switching to that fashion trend. She appeared to have confirmed her converted faith when she deleted all posts on Instagram, leaving now a bio that read Alaikum Salam. Though as Lindsay Lohan returned to social media site on Saturday, she appeared to bolster the claims by stepping out in another headscarf. The former wild child, 30, was at her own club, Lohan Club in Athens, Greece, but she wasn't up to the same kind of antics she previously had been at nightclubs. She's a more mature Lindsay, who was seemingly in the process of rebranding herself, looked demure as she arrived in the Greek dance venue. She wore a long black coat to conceal her knee-high boots, and her headscarf hid her characteristic fiery locks. Her outing followed her return to Instagram for the first time since taking a hiatus January 8th. She shared the moments that she met Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan and 7-year-old Syrian girl blogger Bana al-Abed in Ankara on Friday. In the first of Lohan's new Instagram photos taken at the presidential palace, the smiling actress stood beside Erdogan, who embraced Bana as his wife. Emin poses as his other side. What a dream it is for President Erdogan and the First Lady to invite me to their home. Their efforts in helping Syrian refugees is truly inspiring, she wrote in the caption. She added hashtag peace stars now at some people, I don't know, and then Alaikum Salam, and ultimately closed out hashtag clean slate 2017, hashtag world is bigger than 5. Interesting. That day, Bonna shared a short video on Twitter in which Lohan says, "We want to send all of the people in Syria and Aleppo suffering and to all the refugees, we are here supporting you and you can hang on and be strong just like Bonna has." On Saturday, she followed up with a photo of her sitting with a group including President Erdogan and his wife in the president's lavish 1150 room complex on the outskirts of Ankara. You know what's wild about this? Didn't Erdogan, isn't he the dude that had the coup?
Oh, I don't know.
In Turkey? Anyway, and then,
oh, he might have been.
And then also, like, whiteness is fucking amazing.
Yes, it is.
Lindsay Lohan is just like a 30-year-old hapless failed actress drug addict. This is like, if fucking, like, Lamar Odom was over there to me. Like, it's just like, it's amazing how being a white person can erase all, like, hashtag clean slate 2017. Like, okay. Yep. This year I'm Muslim and I'm very politically active taking pictures with politicians.
Right. I took a hiatus, which means you went to potty drug rehab.
I had no idea. Not speculating. I don't know. But she took
a hiatus. I don't know if she's been before, I think.
Yeah, she has, but she took a hiatus from Twitter. That was only 21 days ago, and then she's over there, so I don't think it's rehab. She's been touring. Okay. She's been doing this shit. She just decided. That's amazing. You can just decide, like, you know what? I don't want to be considered a drug addict.
Control, delete. I'm redoing it.
Yep. No longer a ne'er-do-well. I'm a fucking political ambassador. It's gonna be me and fucking Angelina.
Saving the world and all the kids.
She says, "This now, this moment, a moment in time is to forever exist. Hashtag peace. Hashtag 2017. Hashtag the world is bigger than five. Hashtag yourself to help the Turkish people and what they do every day. Hashtag year of Lindsay Lohan. Hashtag seven wonders. Hashtag, I mean, at RT Erdogan. Hashtag Lohan Club is a form of making others happy." It's like this weird blend of self-promotion and altruism. It's fucking, wow, this is amazing that you can just do this. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Wish black people had that luxury, but we don't.
It's like she's the Jill Stein of actresses. Uh-huh. I'm out here, y'all, in these streets helping these hashtag no DLAP, hashtag donate $1 million, hashtag spending y'all money getting rich, hashtag millionaire yacht club, hashtag Jill Stein, hashtag green party. Lohan had previously expressed support for Turkey efforts to host nearly 3 million Syrians fleeing their nation's five-year war. The state-run Anadolu News Agency said the U.S. actress gave light blue badges to Erdogan and his wife, bearing a quote from Turkish leader, "World is bigger than five." The quote is a reference to the U.N. Security Council's five permanent members, Britain, China, France, Russia, and the United States. Banner came to international attention with her tweets, giving a tragic account of the war in Syria's flashpoint city Aleppo, where rebels' areas fell back into government control last month. She was evacuated from the besieged city to Turkey in December, and later that month, she and her family were given a rare honor of being hosted by Erdogan in the presidential palace. Sharing the picture on a Twitter account, Banner wrote, "Meeting with my friends, Emin, and to support the people of Syria." Lohan, former child star who appeared in hit films Parent Trap, Freaky Friday, and Mean Girls, has struggled with drug addiction and has had numerous run-ins with the law. The troubled actress was sentenced in 2013 to 240 hours of community service for reckless driving and lying to police following a 2012 car accident in Santa Monica, California. But that was what? New year, new me, right?
Yep, new year, new me.
New phone, who this? Hashtag year Lindsay. And a bunch of other shit.
Hashtag I can start over again.
In other white people news, Twitter celebrates a FedEx delivery driver who stopped protesters from setting fire to American flags, and he will get to keep his job because FedEx didn't like that people on Twitter was like, "How you gonna fire this man?" So they let him keep his job. And he's not even white, but it's white people news because white people care about that shit.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Shout out to white folks for that one. Mm-mm-mm. Let's see. Is there any other white people news? Oh, two kids have been arrested. They were planning to do the next Columbine. and one of them wore Nazi gear and posted about the mask online. They white, so of course white people news.
Yep.
They posted shit on Facebook like Columbine basketball team lost its two best shooters, which is a pretty solid joke and also a threat. Might want to check that motherfucker out, is what I'm saying.
Might want to look that way.
Might want to hashtag.
Yeah, we be like, wait a minute. What color are the two best shooters on the team?
At police. Can y'all check them out? At police.
Right. At 911.
Yep. They made a bunch of jokes about that kind of shit. They were planning to shoot anybody not wearing a white shirt. They had the police went over, found a bunch of guns in their house and shit, and detained them.
Were their parents oblivious?
Knowing white people, they bought the guns for them. It's revealed Alan Thicke picked Robin Thicke's brother. Picked his own brother over his son Robin Thicke when it came to taking care of his minor son Carter. So he was like, in his will, he was like, if I die, don't let Robin Thicke take care of the baby. Let my brother do it.
And it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I can't have the son that's on drugs watching the baby. No.
But lastly, in white people news, I had a couple of bad moments. How Mel Gibson went from the most hated man in Hollywood to a 2017 Oscar nominated director.
But what about a pack of niggas?
Karen, why you got, see, this is the kind of shit that
you come down a notch and look like a petty little brat by tweeting and Facebooking this just to open up dialogue so we can have an adult conversation. Ridiculous. In America, you should be ashamed.
Exactly.
Well, I'm not ashamed. I will hashtag never forget about the male mixtapes,
the mailbag music. But yeah, he had a couple bad moments. Karen, why can't you just let old shit lie? Hacksaw Ridge at a recent Academy premiere after it finished airing, 10 minute standing ovation for Mel Gibson. So he back, y'all.
Yeah, he had funded himself now. He couldn't get no funding.
Couple bad moments, guys. And they always bring up the Jew shit because it's Hollywood. And they never bring up the fact that he's talking about the pack of niggas and abusing that woman and threatening to kill her and burn her in the Rose Garden.
Right.
No one cares about that. He did say some stuff about Jews, though, and that's where we draw the line.
Right, that's where we draw the line.
He said, don't be so caught up in the little things. Take advantage of all the gifts the world has to offer. Live every day to the fullest. And I'd also tell my younger self to shut the fuck up. That was his advice to his younger self.
Your younger self, your grown-ass younger self, grown-ass man younger self. Cause
that was on a recent appearance on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert.
You're fairly old, yeah. And it ain't like you 20-something talking about your teenage, or maybe 30 talking about your 20. Mel, what, 50, 60, 70? He old.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Cam, when you're just a young 60-year-old man, you make mistakes. You say things about niggers and Jews, and you don't mean them. And you have to learn to forgive. You have to mostly learn to forgive yourself.
Mm-hmm. And them pack of niggers.
And them pack of niggers, yes. You have to forgive them niggers as well, Cam. I don't know why that's so controversial to say. In Trump's America.
Me either.
But apparently Karen wants him to feel bad about it.
Yes, sir.
How long I supposed to feel bad about the things I said and did to other people? Come on.
Forever.
All right. Well, last thing. No guest erase today. We've gone on for quite some time. Let's do sword ratchetness. Someone in the chat said they can't even watch Lethal Weapon no more because it's racist ass.
Right. That's understandable.
That's a horrible problem that you have, because I watch it. Impossible White Man got nothing to do with this system.
Now that's true too, but I understand.
Mm-hmm. Man accused of attacking a woman with a ninja sword at a Waikiki hotel.
Man is being held on $500,000 bail after police say he attacked.
Now take your time, news. Don't let's not rush to tell the story all at once, okay? So why don't you just pause?
Never in a rush.
Yep.
Ain't like we ain't got nothing else to do for the day.
Damn it. Now I don't even want to play.
You refresh it.
No, I'm just going to read it.
Okay.
A man is being held on $500,000 bail after police say he attacked a woman with a sword in Waikiki. It happened Saturday, just afternoon, in the lobby of the Iwa Hotel of Cartwright Road. According to the court documents, Brian Schatcher was carrying what described as a Japanese-style ninja sword and arguing with workers at the front desk. He was wearing a white robe with a black hat, and the sword was about 2 feet long. A witness in Schatcher said Schatcher used the sword to hit one of the women who works there, twice on the head and once on the body.
Shit.
She was hospitalized in serious condition. Police initially arrested Schatcher for attempted murder, but he was charged with 2 counts of assault. He was identified by his retired military card. Damn, he old. He be hitting people. Scheduled to be back in court on Thursday, guys. All right. That's it. We'll be back tomorrow. Until then, love you.
I love you too. Mwah.